I would want to welcome you and to then declare this meeting open. The subject matter is Health Justice Act. So we're going to take presentations to assess the state of our affairs, given that the Act is scheduled to be implemented as of the 1st of April 2010. So we'll request the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to make the first presentation. After which we'll then field and take questions, get answers, and then we'll move to the next presentation. I will give about 15 minutes for the presentation, and then we can see how we go in the exchanges and so on. So I'll then, in the absence of any other thing, as the department, you have got something to say.
Yes, Jason, sorry, just
Yeah, I was caught up in the prayer meeting in the corridors here. Yeah. The chamber church is here.
Oh, okay.
So when I was coming, I realized that I couldn't just watch. I had to take my blessing. Thank you.
Okay, also apology from Diane Calabano. She had very short notice of this meeting, so she couldn't get here in time from Durban.
I'm being called to order here, but this is not just a justice committee that we should welcome members from other committees, chairpersons for this meeting. We are most welcome colleagues and compatriots. I think compatriots is a very useful way.
Better than comrades.
Thank you very much indeed. So I'll invite the department then to proceed to give us a report.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Pat Moody. I'm the Acting Chief Director for the promotion of the rights of vulnerable groups. The implementation of the Child Justice Act now rests within our Chief Director, and we also chair the operational IECPJ, which is the Intersectoral Committee on Child Justice. So, I'll begin on behalf of Justice. We had a meeting yesterday with the members of the Intersectoral Committee, and it was decided that we were going to do separate presentations. Each department will present their own plan on how ready they are for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. I'm also going to try and use my loudest voice, and I hope that you will all be able to hear me.
Sorry, there's a hand over there. Chairperson for this.
We have members of other portfolio committees who are here, who are attending this meeting for the first time. And they necessarily not understand as to why they are here and what is maybe they can just explain.
Monday will do that. That's going to be.
This thing is not working yet. Thanks, Honorable Chairman. I'm intimidated by my reference. I think to just put all ourselves in space, just reinforce the chairperson's welcome and extension of appreciation to all the members who are leading other committees who make it their primary responsibility to attend this meeting, because I think they must have rated it as a very, very important meeting, essential for this law to go through. We met, Honorable Members, last week as a committee, and that meeting was only attended by the chairperson of the Police Portfolio Committee, Honorable Chikunga. In looking at the processes towards the implementation of the bill, which is the subject today, there's a number of things that, in our view, were not in place which were supposed to be in place. For instance, there was a tabling of the regulation and the implementation plan. Regulation were supposed to have been presented by last year around December. They were presented only last week. and then the implementation plan therefore was supposed to have flown from that. In analyzing that situation and assessing it, we got worried and apprehensive to the fact that we lacked a credible certainty with regard to whether the bill is ready to be implemented by the 1st of April. And we thought it is urgent, therefore, looking at all those process gaps, that we need to have a meeting of this nature where all the key stakeholders who are key role players in the implementation or in the readiness to implement it sit with us here in this meeting today. And we interact at the end of the meeting. We should be able to say, amongst other things that we're missing, was the final clarity on the police instructions, which are supposed to be part of the regulations, and also the MPA directives, which are also part of the, what we call of the bigger picture, that explains the readiness to implement the Act. All those were not very clear, so we had hoped then that, amongst other things, Department of Education, Department of Social Justice, and so on, all the relevant departments would be able, therefore, to say, you playing this particular role for the, in the readiness, you playing this particular role in the readiness, where are you? Having interacted with all those presentations at the end of the meeting, we must be able to say, we think the bill is ready to be implemented by the 1st of April. If the state of processes explain to us that there are serious material gaps which make it impossible for the bill to be implemented in April, this meeting must be able to say, what then do we do with regard to that? Basically, that's the essence of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I trust that that would suffice for now to explain the purpose of the meeting. And maybe we can go back to the presentation. Yeah, please, let's get back to you.
One of the first responsibilities for justice was to develop and promote subordinate legislation. And that's, and firstly I'm going to talk to the notice regarding categories of persons competent to conduct criminal capacity evaluations. This notice has already gone out. Comments are coming in currently. The date for evaluation of the comments is 26th of February. We'll then consult with the Minister of Finance for approval of the notice. That notice needs to be translated, and publication of the notice will be on the 26th of March 2010. The regulations were presented at the last portfolio committee meeting. The regulations were withdrawn and needed to be retabled, and that will be done by the end of February. Approval by the NCO.
Is there a written document?
Yes, there is.
What is it that shall be circulated?
Not this one, because others.
Huh? Oh, that's on that paper.
Not that one.
Do you have a copy of that?
Yes.
This one? Sorry? Which document? Can you show?
Not a master
document. See, that's the top page of the document that they're
circulating. Let's get somebody to distribute. Please, let's proceed with the presentation. It will be distributed, but let's go on with the presentation.
Okay. The table is exactly, the slides are exactly what's contained in the document. The regulations, as I said, were presented at the last portfolio committee meeting. Legislation development from the Department of Justice is here, and I'm not sure if the committee requires us to present those amendments that the committee requested at the last hearing. And we can perhaps do that after this presentation. And then finally, the Act also makes provision for rules of court. The Rules Board has been notified of this, and if they deem it necessary that there should be rules of court that govern the processes of the Child Justice Court particularly, and specifically, then those rules will be tabled. Okay. sorry, the pages are not numbered, but I'm now on point two.
Just a minute. Is that a point of order? What is it? JJ, your name and
clarity, can we ask questions after, at the end of each section, or should we wait for the entire presentation to be finished?
I suggest that we're going to get a presentation and ask questions after each presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. The next responsibility that we want to speak to is the development of the National Policy Framework on Child Justice. The draft document outlining the National Policy Framework has been developed, and a process of consultation is currently underway. A sub-task team of the Intersectoral Committee will edit and finalize this document during February and March. In fact, a date for the small task team's final meeting is the 3rd of March. That document then needs to be submitted to the Development Committee and then to the DG's ISC during April 2010. We need to table the document in terms of the Act 3 months after the coming into implementation of the Child Justice Act. So we anticipate that that will be, we'll present it to the committee by May and table it in Parliament by June 2010. Point number three, research and develop the various policies required within the National Policy Framework. A review of the existing policies has identified the initial research and development requirements, including the following, which is currently receiving attention: draft guidelines for one-stop child justice centers, diversion and restorative justice. And I think in respect of diversion, when the Department of Social Development makes their presentation, they'll talk to us about the readiness in respect of diversion and preliminary inquiries. The preliminary inquiry is a new procedure that has been set out by the Act. We don't really require a policy as such, because the Act together with the regulations sets out the process quite clearly. The draft guidelines for the establishment and management of one-stop child justice centres is nearing finalisation to submission for submission to the DG for sign-off. Four, to ensure that processes are underway to provide human resources and infrastructure for the implementation of the Act. In respect of the department, we've conducted an audit. At present, we only have 2 one-stop child justice centres, and that's the current ones in Mangaung and in Port Elizabeth. Our challenge in respect of one-stop child justice centres is that we do not have a budget, a proper ring-fence budget allocated by National Treasury to ensure that we can roll out one-stop child justice centres. The plan that was discussed at the ISCCJ to take forward one-stop child justice centres has therefore been that we will try and see what facilities DSD has available for secure care, and if there is a premises available within those facilities, then the one-stop child justice centre can be attached to those facilities. It's not necessary to build new buildings and to create these things from the start. For instance, in some areas where there are very high volumes of children who are being arrested, it might not be needed that there is a one-stop child justice centre as such, because sometimes the courts and the police stations are very close to each other. Once children are arrested, they are immediately taken over to the court for assessment and will go through the preliminary inquiry at the courthouse itself. And in larger centres throughout the country where there are high volumes of children, these cases are often channeled by the caseflow management teams into a specific court. And we anticipate that that's the court that will hear the preliminary inquiry. Development of training material for child justice. Child justice training reference group was established in 2009. The draft training manual has been developed, and The trainings have been organized for all 9 provinces. 5 provinces have already been trained. It's basically a training session to test the manual and to for all the role players. It's an intersectoral training that is planned for the role players to make input into the manual so that we can finalize the manual. Now that the regulations are almost finalized, we will be adding the regulations to the manual as well. The national instructions of the police and the national directives of the NDPP will also need to be incorporated into the manual. Coordination of the officials ISCPJ. Yesterday we had a planning meeting to discuss how we're going to approach today's presentation. And I think, you know, something that needs to be clarified over and again is that the ISCCJ has been in existence now since 2005, since 2002. And there has been a lot of work, despite the fact that this is a new act and it comes into operation on the 1st of April. You know, for the members here who do not know the background to the Child Justice Act, for many years now we've been working with a protocol for the implementation of child justice, for the implementation of children awaiting trial. So all the government departments here today have their respective ministers sign off the protocol, and for many years now, a lot of the things that we are trying to put in place now, like the assessments and the, you know, making sure that children are removed from prison and that the alternative accommodation is found for children, a lot of those things are in place that have already been happening. And that's primarily because the operational ISCCJ, the Intersectoral Committee, is well established and has been working well towards, you know, getting these processes in place. We're currently piloting an emerging monitoring and evaluation system. For years now, statistics have been collected in respect of children awaiting trial. And, you know, trends are beginning to show now in respect of the information that has been gathered. Cluster coordination is facilitated via this forum, and it's supported by 9 provincial child justice fora. So the 9 provinces each have their own child justice fora made up of the provincial departments and those entities that are national. And that information is fed through to the national ISCCJ. 7, information management. As I was saying, there's an MNE system that's currently emerging from endeavors that are underway. Development of information systems within DOJ, that's with our ISM unit, and the integrated justice system transversal have been initiated, and consultation is ongoing in respect of that. Our challenges here relate mainly to the dependence that we have on manual statistics and on the different department systems not talking to one another. And currently there's a team of people who are working with members of the ISCCJ to see how we can overcome those difficulties. Communication and public awareness. In consultation with our public education and communications division, child justice material has been branded, pamphlets and posters have been developed, and we will be distributing to our regional offices before the 1st of April. We are hoping to have a launch of the implementation of the Child Justice Act by the Honourable Minister and Honourable DG during the first week in 2010, but we're still waiting for approval in respect of that.
You have 5 minutes to go.
Okay, thank you. Our responsibilities in respect of the coordination between the implementation of the Child Justice Act and the Children's Act. We support the DSD as a main role player to plan for implementation of the Children's Act, and the responsibilities that override the Child Justice Act are the following. Managing of children under the age of 10 years, because most of those cases you will see from the Child Justice Act will actually be referred to the Children's Court, because we would regard these children as children in need of care. Referring children in need of care and protection to the Children's Court. There's an established Children's Act working group in plan for and implement and monitor the impact of the Children's Act on the courts. We've costed the new obligations and have requested the relevant budgets under the Children's Act. The challenge is that they have not received as much as the department needs to be able to fully implement. And I think the final slide is the functions of the ISCCJ, which have been spoken to generally, and then I think just to reiterate that we map the flow of children through the child justice system and can provide quantitative and qualitative data, and then about, you know, in respect of all the items that appear under the bullet points there. Challenges, we do want to talk to some of the challenges that we are experiencing, and primarily they relate to inadequate budget allocations. For 2010-2011, the cluster requested 660 million for all the departments involved and 124 million for the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We've been told that we will be receiving 30 million. And that money will then be divided between the Legal Aid South Africa, the NPA, and Justice. Other departments such as DSC and DCS have made their own bids but have received no additional cluster budgets, and I'm sure that they will speak to that. And then for us, the primary areas affected, you know, is, as we said earlier, the rollout of the one-stop child justice centres, I would imagine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But before I allow the floor, Bonan, maybe you should give us water, at least if you can give us tea. I'm sure members would be very happy to be provided with that water.
I appreciate it.
The cost will be coming.
Sleeping where
you miss your cry is heard out. Yeah. Sympathetic, sympathetic, yeah. So we'll get you some coffee at some point. Please, Jenny.
Okay, I don't think I have a mic, but hopefully you can hear me. The regulations, I mean, look, we dealt with those last week, but the way you've got them here on page two, you've got approval by us. Well, we don't approve it, the House approves, but then you've got approval by MCOP mid-March. I take it you do know that the regulations do not get dealt with as a bill, and it has to go from one House then to the other House, but you can do it consecutively. So I would hope that you are making arrangements to brief the MCOP committee already, that you're not going to wait for us to finish and only then think of going there. I take it you're aware of that. I'm not sure then why this had to be this consequential thing that you've got here of approval by the end of February here and then approval in the MCOP later. But that was the one. Then just here on the training, you've got five provinces have already been trained.
Can I make a presentation? Yeah. This is a very long, onerous process. I wanted to propose this, but why don't you do it one? And we move to two, and we move to three, and then when we're clear with all those, we go to the next thing.
I don't understand the proposal.
No,
I don't understand the proposal. What I'm saying, let me explain. Yeah. If you come to one, this is a state of readiness, number one. If there are any questions that are not clear, we clear that. But when we're in two, we know that we're not going back to one.
Okay.
So these are articulating readiness all the way to number 9.
Okay, let's proceed with that. Yeah. Well, that was all in on that I had on page 2.
Further questions on that? Page 1 and 2.
Yes, one question.
When the lady was speaking, she said the regulations apparently have been turned off. You will understand our ignorance. We're not involved. But she now says they'll be ready. Well, what does that mean? I mean, if you said they would just turn back and then now you say you'll be ready.
Maybe you can take those questions, starting with the first one and the second one here. And the third question, actually.
Also, I'm here from the legislation development unit, and I'm going to ask for
sorry, Chair, I was just busy with one of my colleagues, but just to respond to the query raised by Member Jewish, we will take note of that. I know that in the past the committees were not always very much willing to do that, but taking the time constraints and also the fact that we know at least now what the portfolio committee's preliminary views on the regulations are, and we will take it forward and arrange with. Also taking into account what the dates are when the committee is filling session.
Can I respond on that one? Look, I've got a little bit of a problem with that approach. I mean, and also for the benefit of the non-justice members of the committee, there are regulations that have to be approved by Parliament, both houses, on the Child Justice Act. So they come from the Minister of Justice. We had a briefing on them last week. The House is limited to approving or rejecting. So basically the procedure would be if you want amendments, that regulations get withdrawn and then get retabled if the Minister is happy with those amendments, get retabled with those amendments in them. So that's maybe an answer to, did I say Honourable George? to Honourable George's question, what's happening with the regulation. So we had this briefing. The chairperson of the police committee was able to attend. I think it was quite a large, I don't think it was much notice given. They should be available. But the intention would be that the amendments that the committee wanted would get put in, that we would see those before they are formally tabled again. But on the NCOP process, because it's acceptance or rejection, you need to bring the NCOP on board now. Okay. Don't make us happy as the NA. Have some regulations that we're happy with, and then you take them to the NCOP, who say, no, we don't like this, we want to change. And you've then got to withdraw them again. So please, do the briefing to both houses, both committees. See what changes they are wanting. See if those can be accommodated. And then when you retable for the formal process, that you table something that everybody's happy with in both houses. So I just wanted to respond on that one, and I don't know if I've then answered
Thank you very much. Any other thing you want to add to the answers? Thank you very much. Let's move then to page
go to three.
Yeah, let's go to three. Yeah. Let's go to page three. If there's any comment? None? Let's go to four. Any comment?
Yeah, I've got one on that.
Did you?
Mine is the training. You say five provinces have already been trained. You say it's magistrates and inspectoral partners. But what do you actually mean? And if we were to go out to the magistrates in our constituencies, or the prosecutors in our constituencies, or the police stations for that matter, or the prisons, and ask them tomorrow what you know about the social workers, the Child Justice Act, and what you're going to do about it, are they going to know? Now I think it obviously the magistrates and the prosecutors are key because they deal with the children when they come into court. But the social workers are also vital. Because I remember through you, Chair, to Honourable Chikunga, that I think I heard from some of your colleagues that you visited a police station where this whole thing of children in custody and getting them to court seemed to be unheard of or unknown to them. But so are you in a state where all the role players are going to know what to do? Or is it going to be on the 2nd of April, or 1st of April, depending on what day of the week it is? A magistrate is going to say, I don't know what's going on here. A prosecutor is going to do the same thing. The social worker is not going to be around, and everything goes haywire. So what exactly is your state of preparedness? It's fine to say we've had a workshop in the province, But does that mean that the magistrate in my constituency at Samoy River is going to know what to do with a child that comes into his or her court? Or the prosecutor is going to know? Do the social workers there know? Do the officials at Pietermaritzburg Prison know what is happening? All those things. What state are we in?
Honorable Judge, just on this question of readiness, I would like, as JJ said, just to especially because what we saw, our chairperson saw, there's also the problem of infrastructure, where there is a limited infrastructure where child offenders can be kept to. So can you tell when you say you are ready, what have you taken everything, the infrastructure at the police stations and all that? What do you mean?
Thank you. In respect of the first question, the training, this is the initial round of training on that particular new manual that we have developed. But training has been going on for a long time in respect of the Act itself. You know, from the time the Act was still a bill, there were consultations and things like that, and each department has had individual trainings. So the NPA have trained their prosecutors on this Act. Social Development have trained their probation officers on the Act, and I'm sure that they will cover those aspects in their respective presentations. As far as the magistrates go, the magistrates in KZN have been trained. There was a special training for the magistrates, and they were called to the training. Magistrates in the Northwest have been trained. With the magistrates, the Department of Justice really can't call them to a training. They need to initiate a request to us, and then we'll provide whatever support is required for the training. Magistrates have what they call peer group training. So, for instance, in Pretoria on the 26th on Friday, there's a peer group training for the magistrates in that cluster. So, you know, there have been these individual trainings sessions throughout the country. What we have said to them is that whatever support you might require, you know, we will be happy to provide it as the department. And we have been doing that over the past couple of years.
Infrastructure.
The question specifically is, do we have places for child offenders? Mm-hmm. Now that relates, you know, specifically to secure care facilities where children ought to be kept. And I think that the Department of Social Development will cover that in their presentation. And can I please ask the indulgence that question be reserved for when they do their presentation?
So that applies to social workers as well. When they present the cover.
No, I'm a bit baffled by the training of magistrates. I mean, you've got to wait for them to ask to be trained. I mean, I'm not sure if we're on the same planet. I would have thought that the new Act, it requires implementation. Here is training for the benefits of magistrates, and whether that's through the Magistrates Commission or not, really. But I would really, I'm worried, Chair, I would say. I think it would be useful if we, over the next week or so, and our constituencies who are around here, go and check and see what magistrates, I mean, we're dealing now with justice, but magistrates and prosecutors particularly think. I know there are some members of the NPA that are sitting at the back. I don't know if they're here formally or not. But my worry is not so much the High Court prosecutors. My worry is the District Court prosecutors. Because they're the younger, less experienced people.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to know, you didn't mention in the training anything about the police. Have the police been trained as well? And if not, why not? And what's being done about it?
Once again, I'm going.
Just a minute. Let's get down. We'll come.
Yeah, we'll come through. Yeah. Chairperson, to add on to what the judge said, I want to know about this training that has taken place in the process of the magistrate. Did Are all the magistrates trained, or did they train a magistrate who was expected to train other magistrates? Because it is possible that the few that have been trained did not pass on that information to the other magistrates. Is there a system in place to ensure that all the magistrates are all on board?
No. I think, thanks, Honorable Chair, not to belabor the point, Ms. Middle, is that I think the message that is being put across is that as government, we are ultimately responsible to ensure that this act is being implemented. Others happen to be incidental role players in the process. Therefore, it is our proactive responsibility to be convinced that when this act is out, it is ready to be implemented. So I think that's the principle that is being put across.
Chair, I'm sorry, my underlying and opening statement ought to have been that Justice College has the responsibility to train all magistrates, all judicial officers. So Justice College training is ongoing. Their program for the year is already out. And, so magistrates will get trained by Justice College on all new pieces of legislation. The initiatives and endeavors that magistrates themselves undertake and ask the department for support in are in addition to the underlying training that magistrates will be getting from Justice College. I unfortunately don't have a copy of their program here today, but I'm sure that I will be able to get one should the House require it today. In respect of the police, our police were invited to the intersectoral trainings in the regions. But as I said, the intersectoral training was merely to pilot and test the manual. But police will speak when they address the House today in respect of the training initiatives undertaken by the police.
Thanks. Page 5.
It would be useful if you've got to see your stats, because I seem to remember we had some problems with stats before. So through you, Chair, we can ask, it would be useful to get on a regular basis the numbers of children awaiting trial in prison and the different categories, because often there are problems there. Yeah. And then the other point is on 8. With respect, Director General and not Honourable. Honourable is a term given to members of Parliament and nobody else. Mr. George is Honourable, believe it or not.
That's tell them not to start because they are going to cry again.
Yeah.
Once I start removing and remove and then unleash my they will start crying again.
I'm told they're in the habit of crying. So let's go to number 6.
Yes. Thanks.
Just continue.
Or come closer to the mic somewhere there. Yeah.
Chairperson, I'm getting a bit worried listening to what is going on here, because we're talking about training of the judges, training of the police. I think for the success of this act, we should have a holistic approach, in line with cooperative governance, involve all the other departments, all the other role players together, so that when we start implementing the act, we read from the same hymn book. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's the reason we are here in this form, to integrate the implementation mechanism. Let's go to number 6. Any question there? Comment? None? 7? No comment? 8?
That's the budget challenges.
No. 7 is information management.
Okay.
I'm at 8. 8 public awareness. No, question 9, implementation. You want to come at 9, yeah? 9? Yeah.
9 would be really, you know, we need details. I mean, you asked for a lot of money. You got very little. We really need to get more detail around what's going to be cut, what you're going to be able to do, what you aren't. I mean, the one-stop centres, it was an enabling provision in the Act. The minister made it. It was not something that was obligatory. I mean, although it would be ideal, assuming that there's the budget for it. But what are you going to be, what are you not going to be able to do with that money?
Just clarity, that 124 million, is that part of the 660 million or is it in addition? Part of it. Okay.
Yeah,
just to respond on what we're not going to be able to do, Legal Aid South Africa is here today and would like to make a separate presentation in respect of their readiness to implement the Act. And I think part of what Legal Aid South Africa is going to talk to are the challenges that they're going to be experiencing because of the fact that we have received such a small budget compared to what was asked for. And I think that the NPA will likewise, you know, include that in their presentation.
Let's go to Sam. We're done, I think, with the presentation. Are there questions on the following pages or comments? I thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. What I wanted to say to Ms. Moodley, probably even with the succeeding presenter, is that it would be more comfortable to have a clearer plan than this. Because some of the questions got raised, because when you say this is in the process of being done, it doesn't say this will be finished by which date. And I think what is required, because this is not a fantasy process, it has to be concretely ready for real implementation. Therefore, the plan must be such a manner that it says what is going to be ready by when. And I think we should improve it.
You mentioned that you could speak rather as to what you couldn't do in terms of the budget, and perhaps you could just give us a little bit more an overview of this idea of what can't be done.
Yeah, just for the Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm just worried about the explanation about the huge difference between what they requested and what they got. I mean, to ask for 660 million are given 30 million. And when you are asked how, if you requested 660 million, surely, I'm assuming that there were good reasons, it was not that 660 million was not a thumbs up. So surely it means you budgeted for that 660 million. Sorry. Now, if you are given only 30 million and we are asked how are you going to survive, requested 660, they only given 30 million. I don't know what fraction is 30 million of 60 million. The answer is no. The some group will explain. I don't think that because it's good to say I'm going to you know, when you pass a bill, you say one of the questions that is asked is the department ready for the implementation of the bill? And amongst other things, what determines whether the department is ready for the implementation of the bill is the resources. If you do not have the resources to implement the bill, you will not be able to implement the bill. That's why I'm saying I'm worried, Deputy Chairperson, that the gap between what they requested, 606, and what they got, 30 million, and the way they're treating it is just as if it's a non-issue. Honorable Landas, and that will be followed.
Chairperson, mine is on the same lines as Muleleke George. but I want to approach it differently. And perhaps today's meeting should serve as an experience for all of us. One of the requirements when parliamentary committees deal with bills is whether the bills have been costed. In other words, the financial implications. Now, my memory fails me, perhaps Fatima's will assist us, as to whether when we dealt with this bill, or the act now, we did that, and whether we considered the financial implications. JJ is indicating to me that yes, we did, which means that the department and the officials answered that yes, the financial implications were taken into consideration. That being the case, where does the problem lie now? Because if the financial implications were done in 2008, then why are we facing the problems that we're being told about now? You referred to a substantial training budget, which I assume is separate from other aspects of the implementation of the Act. And you say it's not covered in existing departmental operating budgets. So, then I take my question a little further. The financial implications in 2008 when we dealt with the bill, which was the portfolio committee, which we were told had been approved. Now, did it cover the other departmental operating budgets?
Honorable Koyak, and then be followed by Michael. You follow.
No, just to affirm that I, my memory certainly tells me that we did, at the very beginning, cost the implications of implementing this bill. And clearly it seems to me that costing exercise was not really worth much. But may I suggest, this is for me a bit too little information. And my sense is that there may be all kinds of reasons for the approval of only 30 million, one of which could be the fact that the bill, that the regulation still needs passing and so on. So I suggest, and given that this is a cross-cutting, you see, for me, the issue is that if there's one element of this bill that cannot be practically realized, then you can't implement. Doesn't matter how many regulations you've passed in Parliament, but actually implementing the bill and making it a reality on the ground simply not going to happen. And for that reason, I think it's absolutely crucial that this sentence that says other departments such as DSD and DCS made their own bids but received no additional cluster budgets becomes a real concern to us. And unless they've actually found money within their own normal budgets for the implementation, particularly of the youth centers and so on, clearly that's not going to happen. So I think what we need, actually, is for the department to coordinate for us an implementation plan across the board and give us one presentation of how it is that they expect these things to be rolled out. Because even with a budget, if we're going to start establishing, for instance, youth centers where people are going to be diverted to if they're very serious offenses and so on, we cannot have a situation where we have youth centers in some cities and in other cities we don't have any. So, because otherwise you're implementing a bill that the courts will in any case find to be in conflict with the Bill of Rights and the Equality Clause. So I think we need a more detailed implementation plan from government and all of the departments as a whole, instead of working in silos as we are at the moment. Since we're taking one briefing from this department, then another, and everybody seems to be, at a different level. So I think that's really what we need.
Thanks, Chair. Also following on to what my colleague has said here, it's the practical implementation that is posing the biggest problem here. And as my colleague said, everyone is on a different level, but the only thing that they're certain is by the 1st of April, no one's going to be ready. That's the only thing that everyone has in common at the moment. Now, while there is 3 months after the time to get certain things in place, for example, the additional staff that are referred to, and that's on Chapter 9, it says the additional staff will be required by almost every department to provide for additional functions and increased services demanded by the Act. Now, with 30 million rand, when you've asked for 600 and something million rand, where are these additional staff going to be paid for, and what function are these additional staff going to be able to provide? Another thing is the diversion of child offenders requires the provision of diversion services, and this requires a substantial budget, especially in under-resourced rural areas. Now, once again, the practical implementation of this Act is it's not going to happen in time and in accordance with the timeframes that we've given, because there's only 30 million rand. So, Chair, the whole thing goes back to, and I believe Honourable JJ said this in the last meeting, the 1st of April, this is a date that we're going to have to move, because even if you take the 1st of April and then it allows for an implementation of 3 months, it takes you to the 1st of July, there's still not enough money.
Yeah. I think the big challenge, Honourable Chairperson, that seems to emerge as we continue to interact, is that probably we should recognize the fact that even this meeting today lacks the capacity to give us a final plan. Probably it's another step towards us finally considering a well-organized and coordinated plan. Because I think what the members are raising is that you need one plan, Ms. Moodley, that is going to say these are the objectives that were supposed to be achieved before the 1st of April in totality, and say these were supposed to be the role players, this is what was required. If the role players are ready, what was required is there, and there's a gap. All those marks are put together in a single plan. And then it is easy for a structure like this to look at that well-coordinated single document and say, based on this document, we think this is a document on the basis of which you can pronounce the readiness or not. So the point I'm trying to raise is that what seems to emerge in the meeting is that it qualifies this as another step towards a concrete plan on the basis of which decisions can be taken.
You want to come in? Thank you, sir. I want to echo what my colleague has just said on additional staff. We will not be able to implement this if we talk about additional staff required. Can you please detail this? What do you mean by staff? The category of staff that is needed.
Who do you represent, sir?
I don't know.
Please.
Sorry, for asking.
I'm representing.
Oh, okay.
What group?
Yeah, because if he says we, I want to know who is the we.
Okay.
ANC from another portfolio group.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't
ask what group from the ANC.
Please don't involve us. We've been ANC from the politics. They're out of ANC politics. Okay. Yeah. No, let's go ahead. My colleague addressed the thing. That's why I say we.
So I'm saying, we would not be able to implement this if we cannot categorize the additional staff that is required and the total number of staff that is required to. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. You'll be the last to speak on this.
And I'll try and summarize what I think we should do about this observation.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was any new information on the prosecutor's directive. But if can we get it? I mean, when will that table? Because Parliament also has to approve that. And then I think also to correct Ms. Michael's
Michael, yeah.
The Honourable. I wasn't saying on when did we meet. I wasn't saying that we'd have to amend the Act. I mean, this has been, the date was set some time ago. So I didn't hear people saying it's not ready. I think there's an area where we need more information, quite a lot more information, but I didn't hear you specifically saying it's not implementable by the 1st of April. So I just thought, maybe you can respond specifically, are you ready? And then I think on the other point from my colleague, Honorable Ngubele, that it's a pity we couldn't have had, and maybe it's a reflection of the interdepartmental workings not being that great, but we couldn't have had one document. And then lastly, also, I agree thoroughly, we do need to know how many more people. I mean, I went to my former constituency was Richmond. I went in 2008 to speak to the social workers, and they said, no, they could implement it that easily. They didn't need any more people. They were able to monitor and to do everything. So that's one area, but it would be interesting knowing where this additional staff is going to be needed.
So you want to respond to that before we pass? And I must say to members here, we are not going to have more discussion. What we'll do after this answer, we are going to identify things that have been flagged. And at the end of all these presentations, we'll be coming back to say, we are doing this, and that. So please. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to respond to the queries and the questions on how did we get to 660 million, we have a very detailed budget that was presented to Treasury, and it was an intersectoral, it was a cluster budget. So it included the needs of social development, of DCS, of the Department of Education. So it's the total budget. To speak to the requirements in respect of what can't be done from justice's point of view, now that we've got 30 million, the budget gives you a specific amount, for instance, for training of officials, the establishment of the DG's ISCCJ, the provision of dedicated human resources in courts and in one-stop child justice centres, the goods and services that are required for those courts and one-stop child justice centres, determination and payment of witness fees, expert witnesses that will need to be called, and policies and protocols that would need to be developed and the research that will need to be done to support the national policy framework. So in respect of all of these things, we will now have to reconsider who gets what and how much do they get. And as I indicated initially, one of the primary and major cutbacks for now, because we are not compelled to ensure that there are one-stop child justice centres, is to cut down on the one-stop child justice centres and try and use existing infrastructure, attach them to existing secure care facilities, and make do in respect of that. I think the other thing that I really want to say is that, and I'm sure you'll hear from the other departments, but I think collectively we are quite sure that the implementation of this Act can happen on the 1st of April 2010. And that's simply because, and I said this earlier as well, that the protocol has been in place for the last 8 years. And people have been operating in respect of the protocol. So when children are arrested at the moment, currently, countrywide, the children are assessed. There is a probation officer who will make sure that this assessment gets done, that before that child goes to court, the assessment is done. The prosecutor is aware of what that assessment says and knows whether or not to recommend diversion. What's new is the preliminary inquiry. And the preliminary inquiry is going to require a magistrate and a prosecutor to be able to sit in that preliminary inquiry. Magistrates are saying that because most preliminary inquiries are going to deal with that matter at that stage, and very few of those matters are actually going to end up in trial, that they will be able to manage their resources to ensure that, that the cases that go to preliminary inquiry, you must understand that the same magistrate can't hear the same matter, say that particular matter when it goes to trial, because there might be evidence that's led at the preliminary inquiry that will preclude the magistrate from sitting at trial stage. So, for the next 5 years, not only, you know, we obliged in terms of the Act to test the age of criminal capacity and to provide input to Parliament on the age of criminal capacity, but there's lots of things that will be tested. And the statistics and the trends that emanate from the implementation, certainly in the next 2 or next 3 years, will give us a better understanding of exactly what our needs are going to be. Because until the Act is there and until we start implementing it, we're not going to know. For a lot of us, a lot of the things that we are doing currently is, in effect, giving effect to the Act.
Thank you very much. I'm sure there are issues that we reflect.
I'm not sure if the committee wants a copy of this document.
We would be very happy.
The one that we have submitted to Treasury. The very detailed breakdown of how we got to this.
And at this point, I want to thank you very much. And then say, those of us who have not picked up coffees, you can. But the National Prosecuting Authority can now begin the presentation. So I'm still on time. I'm just talking right on time. Please, let's roll. MPA.
Taking you through the NPA presentation. maybe I think the starting point, I should apologize for not having tabled the directive on time. We have had extensive consultation with the NDPP. Yes, in principle, approved them.
Is it just omitted your presentation?
No, sir. It's not distributed. Reason being that, but they are busy making copies now.
Oh,
reason being that the NDPP are still considering them. They are still drafts. Then the NDPP has perused them, considered them, and endorsed them. He is in the process of signing them. He's made a personal undertaking that he will in person take them to the minister today for the minister to sign them. And he made a personal undertaking that he will table them next week. So the directives will only be tabled next week. However, as the NPA, after the act was signed into law on the 7th of May, we then immediately issued a memo to all the directors of public prosecutions on all divisions, asking them to kindly nominate officials to establish the national NPA task team for purposes of ensuring that there is effective and efficient implementation of the act. Indeed, the NDP, or indeed the directors of public prosecution nominated officials, and then we then established the task team. The task team started its work as early as June. We immediately developed terms of reference for the task team. And after having developed the terms of reference, in the terms of reference, we spell out exactly what it is that the task team needs to do in ensuring effective and efficient implementation of the Act. One, that task team was established to develop the directive, the training manual, as well as the process maps. Process maps are the design showing of the process of child justice in court. Indeed, then that was done. We then decided that we'll have extensive consultation, we'll have commitment to the implementation of the Act, we'll coordinate that with other stakeholders as we cannot implement the Act in silos, and we'll communicate our end product to all our prosecutors and also conduct training throughout the country. We then developed the implementation plan for the task. The implementation plan spelled out the time frame for training manual development, and the training manual was developed and it was then presented to all the DPPs. It was then presented to NPA ESCO and was signed off in August. We then started training, or we posted the execution of the task team in terms of reference. We then started rolling out training. We started rolling out training in October last year. In terms of the plan, we will have 11 training sessions. We started training in KZN. The reason why we started training in KZN is that KZN is one of the provinces with the highest number of children in conflict with the law, and they also have a pilot project in Maritzburg Court. In KZN, we trained 32 prosecutors. The training manual consists of the social conduct. It consists of criminal capacity, age determination and age estimation, detention and placement, assessments, preliminary inquiry, diversion, trial in the child justice court, sentencing options, expungement of the court, and then we also then took them through our draft directives. And we were part of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development team that developed the regulations. And our directives do talk to the regulations. Then we then trained Eastern Cape as well. In Eastern Cape, we trained 30 prosecutors. In the NPA, we have tutors who are mandated to train aspirant prosecutors who come into the prosecution services. We trained all the NPA tutors. There are 22 at present. We then trained North Gauteng. We trained 38 prosecutors in North Gauteng. We trained 46 in Free State. We trained 33 in Limpopo. Currently, we have trained a total of 201 prosecutors out of 2,000 plus prosecutors. But out of the 2,001 prosecutors, we have trained chief prosecutors, deputy directors of public prosecutions, and senior public prosecutors who are managers and who are quite high-ranking officials. And they are trainers who will then have separate parallel training sessions in their jurisdiction. I must say that our training session is a quite detailed training. It's a training of 2.5 days. So they then made an undertaking that they will train prosecutors in their jurisdiction. Indeed, I've checked in KZN and even in Eastern Cape, we've received feedback. They have trained prosecutors there, but the training that they've done, it then reinforces the training that is being conducted by the bigger national NPA child justice task force. We have also developed the diversion register. You'll note that in terms of the Act, there ought to be three registers. They are all the responsibility of the Department of Social Development. But as the NPA, we felt is that we also have to keep our own register so that as and when we are called upon to account, we don't tamper. Indeed, we have developed the register. We have consulted prosecutors by and wild around the register. The register also has been endorsed. It spells out as to how many cases come to us and how many of those are children who lack criminal capacity, how many of those are children who are in need of care and protection, and how many of those were assessed. In fact, currently all our cases who come through, they get assessed. And how many of those, you know, were referred to preliminary inquiry, and how many of those were diverted in terms of Section 41 diversion, prosecutorial diversion, that does not necessarily have to go to the preliminary inquiry. And we then also have a column that says how many of those were resolved through diversion, how many of those were non-compliant, and when they came to court, what then, where steps were taken, whether to know whether the prosecutor decided to go the prosecution route or to impose more onerous diversion program. So we've developed a quite detailed diversion program. And
you have 5 minutes to round up.
Thank you, sir. So currently, as we speak, the NPA task team is conducting training in Mafeking. Unfortunately, I don't know how many attendees are in Mafeking, but the Mafeking training session is meant for all the Northwest prosecutors. After we had costed the execution of the NPA task team, we had suggested to our training coordinators around the country that we need to at least nominate 30 prosecutors per training session. with the view that at the end of the training we would have trained 730 plus prosecutors, because in other training sessions we have more than 30 attendees. And there are back-to-back trainings till the 25th of March. The problem is that we have not trained yet. It's Kimberley. The Kimberley training will be next week. Then Nelspruit, which is Mpumalanga, week after next. Then Kimberley, Nelspruit, Southern Gauteng, Western Cape. Yes. So the last training will be on the 25th of March this year. And in all those training sessions, we will train 30 prosecutors. We've received the nominations. People have confirmed that they will attend training, and they have already planned their roles accordingly for them to be able to attend training. Thank you, then. Oh, maybe that's in terms of the regulations, the directives, they will be circulated. They have been circulated. We have issued directives around diversion. We have issued directives exactly as Section 97(4)(a) requires the NDPP to apply. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do I hear voices somewhere? I don't know. Of course, maybe I'm having problems with my ears. Janice, you're able to come in?
Yeah. Look, we've been given draft directives. I presume it's just what is going to be signed by the national director. Okay. I mean, I think it would be useful if you did give us an explanation as to why you're late on these directives. I see also that the Act talks about you have to do it in consultation with the minister. Now, if you're taking them to the minister tomorrow or this week, is that going to be the first time the minister has actually seen them? Or have you had a process of engaging with the ministry on the regulations? But I think we need an explanation there. Then my difficulty with the directive is, I'm not familiar with your NPA directives. They basically seem to be a guide to the Act. Most of what's here seems to be repeating what isn't already in the Act. And my understanding was that the directives were meant to fill in the gaps, fill in the finer print. You had specific requirements in terms of the Act that you were meant to cover in the directive. More detail relating to diversion. I'm going to find the right section. The national director must, in consultation with the cabinet member responsible for justice, issue directives regarding all matters which are reasonably necessary or expedient to be provided for in order to achieve the objectives of the Act. Now, I would argue that an easy guide to a prosecutor of the Act is not something that needs to be in the directive, because it's in the Act. You don't need to provide for that. You're providing for something in addition that is consistent with the Act. And the fact that to be considered when selecting a diversion option, in particular the following, the diversion of matters where the accused was under the age of 18, but over the age of, sorry, over 18, but under 21, diversion of minor matters, where there's an error as to age, which you just seem to sort of say, oh, you report it to the magistrate. And then the exceptional circumstances for diversion. As I said, I mean, most of what these directives seem to contain is repeating the Act.
Does this need our attention as Parliament?
We have to approve it. It hasn't been formally tabled.
I'm in the directives.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that's the reason I was asking.
Yeah. So we have to formally approve it as Parliament, both houses. Sure, they should give us an input on it. But my worry is because we're running out of time, I'm quite worried about the content of this. I won't go into the more detail until we've had the briefing, but I think what I would like to know is
What's the reason for the delay? Is it going to be the first time the minister is going to see it when the national director signs it and takes it to him? And then do you really think you have fulfilled the requirements of the Act with these directors? And maybe, sorry, one other point. Who else did you consult on these directors? Did you consult the police? Have staff seen it? Because it does involve them to a large degree, and correctional services, I think, would be another major role player.
I was more interested in, and I'm a bit sympathetic, unlike JJ, because I do think that the Act is pretty detailed as it is, and leaves pretty little room for creativity, particularly when it comes to children under 10 who have committed very, very serious offences. I do remember when we had these discussions very early on around criminal capacity and so on. There have been experiences in other countries where kids who are 9, 8 years old were actually murdering other kids at 2 and 3 years of age. And clearly there we should have, I think, done something a little more creative to allow for more interactivity perhaps between the NPA and social development and other role players. But be that as it may, I think I would like to know, we've been told by the justice official earlier that there are aspects that you've already started implementing, assessments and so on. I'm not quite sure what other aspects have been implemented. I'm particularly interested in the diversion issues and whether diversion is a practice that you've directed your prosecutors towards. And if so, whether those diversion programs were sufficiently monitored. I'm not sure if they were accredited as the Act requires those diversion programs to be. And then where you see your role particularly, my worry is that while we say that the Minister of Social Development should accredit those programs, they may not always be the right diversion program for that particular individual. I mean, you don't want to send somebody who's, we used to use this very strange example of somebody who has killed their grandmother to a two-day program on how to behave yourself, you know. So I wonder to what extent you see your role there in terms of actually addressing these issues, because they can be very specific. You may have a range of diversion programs available to a prosecutor, but they're not necessarily the kind of diversion programs that a particular individual needs to be sent to. So perhaps your thinking on that issue.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Around the question why the directives are late, we are very much apologetic. Our understanding was that last year when during the public hearings, we used to come here as the ISCCJ, and the understanding was that the secretariat of the ISCCJ was to actually initiate the tabling of all the documents simultaneously. Those being the national instructions, directives, guidelines, and so on and so forth, and regulations. Unfortunately, last week when they came down, we were conducting training in Polokwane. We only received invitation at the 11th hour, and unfortunately we couldn't be part and parcel of that process. As for the consultation with the minister, when we developed the directives as well as the training manual, we had a consultative process with the DG, with Justice College, and with other departments as well. We conducted a workshop at the NPA. We invited all of them. They were all represented, including the Office of the President. So the minister in person will be seeing them for the first time. However, consultation was done with the accounting office of the department. Regarding repeating the act around the directives, the directives are not necessarily the repeats of the act. They directing prosecutors exactly what to do, and we have in addition to the directive, develop process maps, traffic designs, showing exactly what steps should precede what and what steps should follow in order to make the directive user-friendly and easy guide to use in court on a daily basis. We have alluded to all that which is required of the NCPP in terms of Section 97(4)(a). We have given directives around what should happen around the question of criminal capacity. If you look into E, around categories of child offenders, which is page 4 of the directive, under 2B there, it is spelled out that after the probation officer has put together his assessment report, if the probation officer hasn't, in terms of section 9, subsection 3, paragraph A, subparagraph Roman figure 6, if she or he hasn't said whether there is any action contemplated further, the prosecutor should put together a report, and that talks to regulation 13 of the Department of Justice as to exactly how that should unfold. So we have touched on that, and also the question of all the schedules. In terms of the directive, we have divided them according to categories of child offenders and spelled out all those categories, starting from children under 10, 10 and 14, 14 and 16, and also that special category, which is 18 and 21. We've also dealt with not only the categories of child offenders, but we've dealt with categories of offenses as well. Your Schedule 1, your Schedule 2, and your Schedule 3. In terms of Schedule 1, we said every prosecutor can divert an appropriate and deserving case. But in terms of Schedule 2, and we've pinched it at the level of a senior public prosecutor, then in terms of Schedule 3, only the DPP can issue a certificate in terms of Section 30, subsection 2. And we've also developed that certificate as well. Around the question of consultation with other departments, when we developed this, as I've alluded to it before, we had a workshop wherein we invited all of them, and that workshop was also financed by the Department of Justice, not by the LPA. All departments were represented except police. Unfortunately, police couldn't make it. And in the process of social development, developing their guidelines for probation officers, for assistant probation officers, for child and youth care workers, we were part of that process from start to until the end of the process. Around the question of developing the multi-sectoral training manual that Advocate Pat Mutley has referred to, we also were part of that one. So we were part of all the processes, we've consulted all the departments, and we've made input from the prosecuting perspective. And also the regulations, we inputted a lot on this. And around the question of what other aspects of Act is NPA implementing, we have for years been implementing diversion. We have to date diverted more than 300,000 children. And diversion is still ongoing. and diverse, and another around the, also the question of restorative justice. Your family group conference, your WOM, we are also making use of that, as well as ADR. Around the question of role of NPA regarding diversion programs. Yes, we're mindful of the fact that not all prosecutors know exactly what diversion programs entail. But as I've said, in the process of the NPA, partaking and inputting into the development of guidelines, we have made an undertaking and we have an agreement with the Department of Social Development that our prosecutors will also be sensitized around the question of diversion program to know exactly whether the diversion program is in fact a relevant diversion program and whether it's commensurate with the offense committed. If you refer to the directive, page 2, Directive B7, we allude exactly to that. The fact that prosecutors should know exactly what diversion programs entail, whether they are commensurate to the offense committed, you know, whether they are appropriate and will impact any skills development upon the child offender. Thank you. I'm not so sure that I've left us any questions.
Yeah, just a follow-up. I'm sorry, I didn't get the reason for the delay. I mean, there seems to be something involving the Department of Justice as the coordinating body, and we're not able to come last week, but I'm still not clear. When do you start drafting these regulations? That's one. Two, I'd like to know specifically, were the police consulted on these directives or not? And if so, at what level? You spoke about some workshops that the police did not attend. Number two, correctional services and social development. Were they consulted and at what level? Because they are quite key. And then I'm afraid I stand by my original position that unfortunately most of what is here is repeating the act. And the problem then comes in is when you don't actually repeat it correctly. So you've got here the Section 52 of the Act, which is a requirement, and it's under B1 of your regulations. The child, and if available, his or her parents, an appropriate adult or guardian, consent to diversion. So the child has consented to diversion, and if available, the adult, the guardian, is available. You've got here the child is also a parent or guardian or appropriate adult must consent to the diversion. It's different. We then have a prosecutor who then says, okay, I'd like to divert this case. Where is the parent, guardian or appropriate adult? Oh, they're not here. Okay, this directive says I must have them. Sorry, no diversion. Whereas the Act has a provider if available. And you do have issues of childhood households where there are no guardians. Mm. So my difficulty is, you haven't just repeated, I mean, that's one instance, I've seen this now. This is one instance, I haven't gone through it. You haven't just repeated what's in the Act. You've repeated it as far as I'm concerned wrongly. And that's the problem with my understanding of a directive, is that it is meant to be adding more detail. And generally, if you go through this, look at the section, you're repeating what is in the Act, or at least trying to repeat what is in the Act. But anyway, Chair, just in short, why the delay? Please, a better explanation. To the consultation with police, correctional services, social development, and I think the other would be comment. I hope more work would go into this before we ask to approve it.
Yeah, I was going to, before the answer, what do we do with your last comment about the repetition of the act, as we suggest, but also in terms of misrepresenting it, creating the differences. Well, what do you suggest specifically, what do you suggest we do about that?
before they answer the other thing.
Look, it, as with the minister's regulations, I mean, we've got a veto on this as Parliament, accept or reject. As with the minister's regulations, and it's the same as with the minister's regulations, I would suggest you circulate them before the minister's table. That you circulate them informally for a briefing, for discussion, in both houses, before both committees, and then you see if we have proposals that we want to make, and if necessary, then they can be amended, and then what is tabled formally is something that can be approved.
I just have a slight concern that none of the consultation appears to include the Ministry for Women and Children and People with Disabilities, and surely this Act is directly relevant to their portfolio.
I just wanted to follow up on the issue of diversion. I haven't heard whether the diversion programs that you currently use are in fact accredited by social development. And if there are some programs that are not, you know, what exactly are they and so on, can we be given a list of diversion programs that are being used countrywide and where they exist? Because one of our keen issues has been the lack of diversion programs in certain parts of the country. Now, we have constantly said that if you're going to implement this Act on the 1st of April 2010, then you must ensure that there is some degree of equity throughout the country. Otherwise, you're going to have serious problems with civil claims and all kinds of things. So can we get a list, firstly, of those that are accredited and those that are not accredited, if any, and then where are they, and which are the areas that you're actually having problems in terms of the availability of these programs?
Okay. You want to respond to the question?
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Around the question of why we are around the question of when
we have run out of time.
Around the question of when did we start drafting directives? I've said the task team started its work as early as June. So the directives were drafted as early as July last year, and there was a consultative process with the stakeholders and also with all the divisions of the NPA. So by last year, around November, we had a draft of the directives. But there is a bigger NPA task team that is busy looking into amending the NPA policy manual and changing Part 7 of the NPA policy manual that we used to rely on in terms of diversion to specifically cater for adult diversion. And they've added this right at the end of the policy manual as Part 48 to specifically cater for children in conflict with the law. So that bigger NPA task team worked on them in February this year, the first week of February this year. The reason why they were not tabled on or before the 1st of December last year, as we should have, as we ought to have done so, as I've said, our understanding was that the Secretariat of the Commission, ISCCJ, was going to initiate the tabling of all these documents at once, rather than having piecemeal pockets here and there. That's the explanation around when did we start drafting directives. Then the second question was about where other departments consulted. Yes, the other departments are consulted. The question is, another question is, at what level were they consulted? We consulted all departments to the except correctional services. We didn't consult correctional services. We did not consult police because police were not represented. but Department of Justice was represented, the President was represented, Social Development was represented, Justice College, which is also part of the Department of Justice, was represented, Legal Aid South Africa was also represented. And we then circulated these directives for comment. The level that we consulted, the people who attended are from the level of the deputy director up until chief director. Then around the question of repeat of act, and that not only did we repeat the act, but we repeated it wrongly. We'll look into that, and we'll certainly circulate this before both houses as soon as possible. Before we leave here today, we'll try and secure a date, if possible, to do just that. And diversion programs currently used, whether they are accredited or not. We are currently using diversion programs that are offered by NICRO. And yes, we have problems, we have teething challenges here and there. NICRO is not necessarily available throughout the country, particularly in rural areas. Yes, we have NICRO almost all over in urban areas. But in places where we do not, where NICRO does not exist, the Department of Social Development are in fact there to provide a diversion program. And they are funding under non-governmental organizations to do that. But they are here. They are best suitable to respond to that. Whether then, but what I can say, they have developed minimum norms and standards for diversion service providers as well as for diversion programs as well.
My question isn't answered. Has the Ministry of Women, Children, Disability, and People with Disabilities been consulted as well?
May I respond to that, Chair? The Ministry for Women and Children and People with Disabilities were invited to the ISCTJ forum. They still invited. Documents that are distributed amongst the members are sent to them, but they have not attended any of our meetings. The workshop that was called to discuss the directive was one that was called by the ISCTJ, and they didn't attend.
Okay. Is there anything you want to comment on still? You are happy with
your answers so far?
Okay.
Then we are going to round off
now and move on to the presentation by police. You want to say something before Honorable Ngungubele comes in?
Thanks, Chairman.
You are happy. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe my comment would be appropriate, Chairperson, at the end. Because what I'm worried about is that in almost all the presentations we might come across this, that in our coordination and interactive processes, there's a casualty of proactivity. And the tendency of work to rule. And I think we should find a way around it. That if, for instance, your primary responsibility is to put together directives, and police happen not to come, and so happen not to come, it's not only this unit. There seems to be a tendency to say, then they were not there, we call them. Maybe we need to do something, because we rely on the administration to work proactively, actively, and reactively. All those elements. It's only that type of administration with those characteristics that can actually be relied upon to implement our policy. And I'm worried about this element of work to roll. And I hope as we proceed, it finds its way out of its system.
Out of the system, sir.
I'm sure that we have identified that issue and flagged. As when we summarize what needs to be done, I want to invite
South African Police Service.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Division Commissioner Cruiser. With me on my right is Assistant Commissioner Helnick from our Legal Services. They've been circulated.
Oh, okay.
Commissioner Molivi from the National Commission's offices. Director Ngadi from our Social Crime Prevention. And Superintendent Kof from our Training Division. And Sinus Van Rooyen from Legal Services. The content of our presentation will be introduction, our national instructions, training, communication in support of the implementation of the national instruction, and then monitoring and evaluation. On the issue of the national instruction, Section 97.5 of the Act requires National Commission to issue national instructions. This must be done after consultation with the DGs of Justice, Social Development, Education and Correctional Services. Instructions must be submitted to Parliament and after 30 days published in the Gazette. The instructions published in the Gazette must be submitted to Parliament before the Act comes into operation. Presently, a draft national instruction has been completed. The existing standing orders have been amended where appropriate. Departmental forms have been developed. Consultation process commenced. Following up consultation process will be incorporated. Instruction will be published in the Gazette in the last week of March 2010. On the issue of training, the overview, we have a broad target group. Then we have education, training and development solutions supporting the implementation of the Child Justice Act. In this we include firstly a one-day information session, then a two-day in-service training workshop, and then for sustainability, a one-week in-service learning program, which we integrate into other programs in the police. We will develop the training capacity, and we have an implementation plan for this. Our first broader target group to ensure the implementation of the Act would be the provincial heads responsible for visible policing, which is the primary role players in terms of this Act. Our cluster commanders who are responsible for supervising all station commissioners at the local level. Key police officials at the cluster level dealing with visible policing. All our station commanders. All our detective branch commanders. Our family violence and child and sexual offences unit commanders. Our community service centre commanders. Community service centre's relief commanders. Community service personnel including members responsible for police cells and detention. Key detectives nominated from each general branch or unit, and then our basic training learners will all go through this program. In terms of our ETD solutions to support the implementation of the Act, as I said, firstly we have the one-day information session. This will be presented at a decentralized level by our subject matter experts, our legal services, supported by division training. The second intervention will be a two-day in-service training workshop for police officers dealing with the Child Justice Act. This again will be presented both at decentralized and a national level by division training. And then lastly, for sustainability, we'll have a one-week in-service learning program for police officials specialized in dealing with vulnerable children. This will be presented both at decentralized and a national level. Chair, the one-day information session will target these groups as mentioned. And our focus will be primarily around the Child Justice Act. Clearly out what the responsibilities of these officials are in terms of this Act, and then more specifically around the national instruction, which will instruct them what they must do in terms of this Act. The second 2 day intervention session, which will deal with much more detailed presentation of this in terms of the Act itself, and also the national instruction itself. The one-week in-service learning program, which will be our sustainable program, which we will implement throughout the organization and integrate into all the other programs, would be vulnerable children. And here we deal with the issue of the Child Act of 2007 and other things in terms of vulnerability of children. Also the Child Justice Act, plus the national instruction itself. Chair, this is just a diagram to illustrate our process in terms of creating capacity to ensure that we ensure training takes place to the lowest level itself. Chair, for the time, we have three implementation plans on the 1 day, on the 2 day, and the 3 day. I won't go into details, otherwise you can run out of time, but we can ask questions on them later.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That has been quite helpful. Is it? Go.
Okay, yeah. the national instructions. You plan to, when do you plan to have them in Parliament? You've said that you will publish them in the last week of March. When are they going to be tabled in Parliament? Because basically they can only be published 30 days after they were tabled in Parliament. So if you're planning to publish in the last week of March, which you would have to do before the Act comes into effect, you're going to have to table them this week. And so have you got a date? And they get tabled by the Minister. And then have you consulted the DGs of social development, justice, and constitutional development, and education? I don't know what education means now, given that it's split. There's probably both, and the National Commission on Correctional Services. Have you consulted those people? Because you can't finalise the instructions until you've done that. And if you're going to publish by the end of March, which you need to, you've got it table this week. So just give us more detail on that, please. That was number one. Number two, the regulations from the Department of Justice, have the police made input into them? Are you happy with the initial draft, or the draft that was tabled that is being withdrawn? The NPAA directive, are you happy with them? Did you manage to make an input, even though you missed the workshop? And then lastly, I think the biggest problem, I mean, hopefully our colleagues on the police portfolio committee, is the implementation of the station level. I remember we had hearings in Upperton. We went to the local station, not the Uppington one outside Uppington, in one of the suburbs. Found kids in the cells. Asked when they were going to court. And the police seemed to feel that the 48-hour rule was they had to wait 48 hours before they brought them to court, rather than they had to bring them to court within 48 hours. There were other problems with the probation officer refusing to come to the police station and wanting to assess the kids in court. But I think I gather that the portfolio committee had a more recent experience. That was 2 years ago, so it hopefully would have changed. But you know, that we had to explain to the police, look, these are kids. There were some girls, there were some boys. It's in your interest to get them out as soon as possible, because if something happens to them, you're responsible as the station commissioner. So process to move them on. But I think it's at that level where the problem is. So yeah, how are you going to ensure that station commissioners know what to do?
Okay, over there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Are you answering questions?
No.
Okay. You're asking. Okay. Thank you.
My concern is also around the I would like to know from yourself whether you have problems with the regulations that they are. We know you've made some input. Some of it was taken on board, but I believe some of it not. And I think what is important is we don't want to see a repetition of the Domestic Violence Act, where now, more than a decade later, we still have problems with the implementation of that act at the police station. I quickly went through the national instructions, and it seems like a hell of a administrative burden with all that is needed. Forms of these are completed. If they can't transport the child secretly, and where there are more than one police station
that won't be able to do this. And they don't have cells, so they can't wait for vehicles either. They will have to move them. Another form to be completed, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like a huge administrative burden to me. And I have concerns about cell capacity to deal with it. And whether we are not putting an administrative burden here that will in the end not be met, resulting in stuff getting into trouble, and in the end, having implications on the act itself. The third issue that I have around this thing is the issue of children kept in police cells. Honourable John Keppins has raised this issue. We just come from Mpumalanga. And we've been to a station where there are children, 25 children. Let me start at a different point, because it also impacts on social development and justice, etc. There's one care center, safety for children, in Mpumalanga. One. It's very small. We haven't been to one station in Mpumalanga that's got cells that didn't have children in those cells. Because the place of safety is children, and that's always been. We went to one station, Nelstrip, where there were a group of 25 children who've been there for more than 3 months in the cell. Now, how are we going to address that issue? That to me is still not clear. Even from the instructions from the bill itself, it puts another responsibility. How are we dealing with it? Because we, as the committee, complain to the police about it. But if social development does not have these places for safety, then surely we can't blame them for having the children in the cell. The correctional services are saying that they're busy revamping the jail, they can't make the game. So what are we going to do in terms of that situation? I just think we I'm worried that we're going the way of the domestic violence. I'm seriously worried that we're going the way of the domestic violence. And I think this is an opportunity for the police also to line up to us those issues that you still have problems with in terms of the regulation. That you feel is going to put an extra burden that you won't be able to cope with. Then last on the issue of training. As with domestic violence, as we know the number of interventions that have taken place in terms of training and retraining, two-day program, five-day program, seven-day program. I see that you are going to distribute this booklet by the end of April. Now, then the act is already a month in place. What worries me is that first contact happens between an ordinary police officer on the ground. It's by the time that child gets to the police station, a lot of what is in the act might have already been addressed by your ordinary police officer on the ground. So I'm just a bit skeptical about the training system, whether we are actually going to cover. And again, I'm putting it to you as an opportunity to tell us where the problems are. Because you can't train these problems at all.
Chairperson, some of the questions have been raised, but I want to put them in a summary. I think the police must tell us, are they ready to implement this act? Because if they are not ready, it's going to soon to come out. You see, they did the same thing with the Domestic Violence Act. Up to now, we still got problems. And what we saw in the police stations, of course, like the Honorable Member Fonseca said, it's not only a problem of police, it's also social development, which is not coming to the party and play its role. But my question to you, one, are you ready? Because even in terms of training, my assessment is the police stations have gone to some of us. I do not get the indication that the police on the ground are ready. Or if you say you've trained them, my question is, have you trained all of them or have you started a process of training them? Because some of them seem not to know anything or very little about this whole issue of this act. So that's why I'm saying other parts have been said, but my question in a nutshell, are you ready to implement this act? And I think it is in your own interest to tell us the truth.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. I will start off with the first part of the questions, and then I will pass on to Commissioner Cruiser to deal with the rest. As far the first question relates to tabling in Parliament, from the Honourable Member Jeffries. Chairperson, we are in the process of, in the consultation process, and the matter has been referred to the Minister. We are waiting for the Minister's decision, final decision and approval to table in Parliament. That is the point where we are at the moment. We have distributed to you copies for informal purposes, for you to give us some inputs. Any inputs that you may have will be welcome, of course, proactively. You can provide us with that inputs. Then as far as the regulations are concerned, Chairperson, yes, we have difficulties with the regulations. We have raised those difficulties with the Department of Justice, and we have reached an initial agreement on how to address those difficulties. So my colleagues from Justice can confirm whether this is correct, but my understanding is that those difficulties will be addressed, and we will then be in a position to say that we don't have difficulties with the regulations. As far as the national directives are concerned from the NPA, Chairperson, we did not make inputs from the police service into the development of those directives. I hear what my colleague from the NPA has said concerning our non-presence at a particular meeting, but we were not specifically consulted, and therefore, no, we did not give any inputs. And then, Chairperson, as far as the remarks concerning Upington, it's extremely difficult for me to sit here and to comment on the situation in Upington. We were not prepared to find out exactly what I assume that in the circumstances, serious mistakes were made by the police service in having children in the cells. But as the Honourable Member from Wake indicated, Chairperson, the police service in this case is pivotal in dealing with the children. We are there. We are the first contact with a child that is alleged to have committed an offence. This point is the liaison point where other departments must come in and play a role. And we have no difficulty with other departments playing their roles. No difficulties at all. The difficulty that we have is the availability of facilities for those children. Because one of the main pillars in the Child Justice Act is that children should not be in cells. Full stop. We do not want them in police cells. However, Chairperson, the Act itself, the regulations, also make provision for exceptions, where a person is dangerous, etc., etc., etc. I don't want to go into those details. All I want to say is, what do you do with children if they are not supposed to be in a police cell, but the facilities where they are supposed to be are not available?
So the exception becomes the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and it's a serious problem. Chairperson, Chairperson, on a point of order, the fact of the matter is, we are confronted with a situation. We cannot simply release children in the community. I fear for their safety in the community. Once they are accused of serious crimes, and they are not in some care facility, it's a serious problem. And then as far as the input into the regulations are concerned, yes, Chairperson, we made inputs. Some of our inputs were accommodated, some of them not. We would have preferred more of them to be accommodated, but Chairperson, we have reached agreement with the Department of Justice. So the issues that are real issues that we require to be addressed, because remember, Chair, what is very important?
Our national instruction is a very low-level instrument. We cannot make national instructions that are in conflict with regulations, that are in conflict with the Act itself. So therefore, the Act must be there, the regulations must bring it down, and only then can we have national instructions that are in line with those. So that made it very difficult for us to actually finalize it. But our national instructions are basically finalized, except that we may receive comments either from yourselves or from the other departments, which we will obviously, insofar as possible, accommodate. And then the remark as far as the administrative burden is concerned. Chairperson, the fact of the matter is, the Child Justice Act has put in place a framework for dealing with children in conflict with the law. But it is obvious that Parliament has said, we want to make sure that this is followed. So checks and balances have been built into the Act itself. And in order to give effect to that, and to make sure that those checks and balances will be effective, our national instruction must address it. That is why it is so detailed. The next point, Chairperson, I've already remarked concerning the question of children kept in police cells. And one remark before I hand over to Commissioner Kruger. The question, are we ready to implement? Chairperson, I think that question may not be correct. Because if we say that, if we are going to wait that everyone is perfectly capable of dealing with every eventuality of the Act, this Act will never come into operation. So we must say, yes, there are loopholes. Yes, there are areas where we will make mistakes, where we will not be able to deal with everything in accordance with the Act. But, Chairperson, in essence, we are committed, we are driving it, we believe that insofar as we can, we are going to comply with this Act. That is what our intention is.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, can I ask Director Nadia, who is responsible for implementation from Visible Pollution, to respond to something before I round up?
Thank you, Chair. If I could just draw your attention to the issues of referrals and networks, which would be in answer to the Honourable Member's concerns about issues relating to other departments, which then we would need to have a system for. One of the issues is that with regard to places of safety, we liaise, we would be liaising with the Department of Social Development in order to establish what the plans are, where the next one is going to be placed, and so on and so forth. However, if I could just remind the members that we have been implementing the interim protocols for the last 8 years. And in terms of the interim protocols, one of our first choices is also there in our standing orders. One of our first choices is when you come across a child, if you can find a responsible adult who may be a parent that you hand that child over to, indeed do so. If not, then you would have to resort to other alternative means, including the places of safety. Probation officers is another concern that we have. And social development has been in the process of just sending that information out to our members at provincial level. It would be for us then to ensure that by the 1st of April, that information that has been sent to the provincial commissioner, the provincial commissioners have ensured that they then send out that information further to other stations to the stations under their command. In terms of issues of monitoring and evaluation, which has to do a lot with the quality control aspects that we would all be concerned with, it is our duty as us, a national office, together with the provinces, to ensure that those stations are being visited just for people just to check as well whether indeed people are complying with what has been set out. I think in that way, knowing that we already have the interim protocol which we've been implementing, supported by training that has been provided, we'll just continue to try and improve our performance.
Honorable Chikonga, told you her hand has been up. I didn't see it myself.
No, I think somehow I'm covered. I thought that maybe we were also giving the Department of Police an opportunity to say whatever in the presence of other departments. I'm not very sure whether the 30 million that was said to be for the implementation of this of the act or whatever is including the Department of Police as well. And if not, if they have costed the implementation of this, I'm not very sure about that. But citizens, probably there will be a need for us also to get more information as a portfolio committee. I don't know when, because we have a full schedule of meetings throughout this session. It's now the third act. It's Domestic Violence Act, Firearms Control Act, Child Justice Act now. I'm not very sure whether I can say with certainty that this will be implemented. Whether those protocols we're talking about are being adhered to themselves, not up the act itself, I'm not very sure. But we probably hope that they will be implemented. Having come from the police stations that we visited, really, at Mayflower there are no police cells. When they arrest people for having committed serious crimes, they still have to drive 120 kilometers just for them to be in the police cells, the nearest being MLO or prison. It will be two cars, one with the child, one with the children, with the adults, and two drivers. Will they be able to do that today? When we go there as the portfolio committee, are we going to find these things happening? I'm not talking as to where they are going to keep them in MLO prison police station, because they won't have the space again. I'm just asking these things, because when we go out, we'll be looking for them. But also people can actually sue the department when the act is in place. I'm just raising these issues not from a point of blaming the department, but from a point of saying due to the department, probably it's important for the department to say these things, because as Commissioner Herod is rightfully saying, they are the first contact with the children who are in conflict with the law, who have committed these serious crimes. If you go to prison, yes, it's close by. They've committed armed robbery, murder, attempted murder, unlicensed firearms, they are there. It's not like they've just stolen sweets from my pocket or firearm and something like that. I'm just saying that, and I think, again, as Van Vetti say, Honorable Van Vetti say, we are still going to have an act that is not adhered to by the people who are supposed to implement or execute the act. This is the third one.
Thank you. Over there.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to respond to some of the concerns that are being raised. The Child Justice Act was drafted particularly to address these concerns. Arrest is a matter of last resort. Before a policeman arrests a child, they must try to either give them a written notice to appear at a preliminary inquiry or issue a summons to a child to appear before a preliminary inquiry. As has been stated, for some more serious cases, children will be arrested. But when they are arrested, then there are provisions in the Act that compel a police official within 24 hours to report that arrest to a probation officer, who is then obliged to do an assessment and ensure whether there is another placement for that child. Secondly, within 48 hours, that child must be brought before a preliminary inquiry. A preliminary inquiry now differs from, you know, the situation of first appearance in court now. The preliminary inquiry is an informal procedure where the magistrate, the prosecutor, the probation officer, the child's parents, any other appropriate adult in that child's life get together to make a plan in respect of that child. And if the preliminary inquiry decides on the further placement of that child, that placement will have to be either at a secure care facility or, even if necessary and there's no secure care facility available, at a prison. So that child is no longer in the police cell. And that's what we're trying to, that's the position we're trying to address with the introduction of the Act. Right now, those protections aren't there for the children. Whereas if the Act comes into operation, those protections will be there for the child. It will actually rid the police stations of children. Because right now, the magistrate remands that to police stations sometimes.
Yeah, I think we need to really summarize. Even members feel so themselves. With me, we're all in mind on this.
Dr. Kelvinet didn't answer about the consultation with the DGs of Justice, Education, Health, that's been done. Okay, so you have sent them to the DGs of those bodies, okay? The issue I raised about Uppington wasn't Uppington, it was 2 years ago. It was more an example, which is probably ongoing. Also, I'm not interested in what's happening, or I am interested, but it wasn't to get a response of what's happening in Uppington today. It was more of a problem of communication with the attestation commissioner level. And then I see from this budget document we've been given that you don't want any money. that you say you can do it in-house, which I think is good, and I don't understand why for training, when departments do have a training capacity, you need to shove in these huge budgets. So I just wanted to confirm, because I mean, I see it, they'll come later, but you know, Legal Aid South Africa wants $500,000 for training, etc. Is it correct?
Or
is it correct that you don't want
line anything? Budget? Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Well, I think we're done with this part. And we are moving to correctional services. Correctional services, please present.
I
do have some program, yeah? Which maybe it's not a minute.
Okay.
Huh? Yeah, my program say Department of Correctional Services.
Two.
No, it's not saying two. Two up is not two. You have food there.
We're not questioning your authority, Chair. We're just questioning why correctional services seems to be the bottom of the chain, whereas social development is near the top.
Yeah.
And yet we're leaving them, well, I'm not even sure we're going to reach them today.
And that's what we want.
I'm doing, I'm pushing my program,
okay,
so that I get to social services as well. I don't want anybody not to be presented, because there is food here anyway, and we'll keep on munching. So we can work, yes, we eat, we're eating and we're working. And we will reach, if we move at this speed, the current speed, we are doing fine. It's only when we have the lacunas and bumps and that's
what we're just then find out when we're going to get to social development, because some of us have meetings to chair soon and would need to leave and particular.
So you want to?
Yes.
Are you proposing that we change the order?
Yeah.
I would be grateful if you would, so that some of us can be.
Okay, in order to restore my authority, let me agree. It was preface. We say we don't challenge your authority. So in order to restore my authority, let me agree. We'll then go to social development. Okay, thank you very much. Social development, please.
Is that social development?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Connie Mumalo. I'm the Chief Director responsible for Families and Social Crime Prevention within the department. I'm accompanied by my colleagues, Mr. Stephen Marcellesen, Ms. Margot Davis, and Ms. Agnes Meller. I'll be doing the presentation. The first slide really, it tries to show the committee the overall contribution of social development within the criminal justice system, not only focusing on child justice issues. So just tap on so that all the sectors are in. Those are the key responsibilities of social development within the criminal justice in that schematic diagram. But when we come to the Child Justice Act, the Act stipulates that we need to provide for assessments within 48 hours of arrest of all children by probation officers. Also, we need to provide diversion services and ensure availability of resources, which includes funding, provision of alternatives for children awaiting trial, home-based supervision programs, which we currently use as a both as a sentencing option and also as a diversion program. Also, provision of residential care facilities, which is our secure care facilities. Also, provision of pre-trial and pre-sentence reports, alternative sentencing options, and most importantly, prevention services and also intervention, early intervention services. We thought it's important to also mention supporting legislation that are supporting the implementation of the Child Justice Act, because we have started appointing this new category of workers of probation officers and APOs long before the Act was finalized because of the very legislation that you see on the board. We're managing the Probation Services Act as a department, which really assisted us to continue appointing probation officers. And it also makes provision, Section 4B, the issue of assessment is also key there, which is supported by the current legislation. That is why we've started to do assessment long before the passing of the legislation. Also, the new Children's Act, we make reference and interface to it because certain sections really support the implementation of the Child Justice Act. Your Chapter 13 specifically, which deals with the establishment of residential care facilities, and it defines what is it, most especially the secure care, and also Chapter 8 in terms of other programs that we need to provide. That is the number of personnel that we have appointed in provinces. In terms of probation officers, we currently have 484 full-time probation officers servicing all courts in the country. And when I say probation officers, these are the people who are only doing probation work, nothing else. And in other areas, we also have social workers that are doing other work and inclusive, they also do probation work. But these ones, they are specializing, they don't do any other thing but probation work. And in terms of assistant probation officers, we have currently 360 assistant probation officers who are working hand in hand with the probation officers. And their duties are clearly stipulated in the Probation Services Act. They really do supportive role and provide diversion programs and other supervision services for children in conflict with the law. Yeah, I also want to mention the issue of volunteer assistant probation officers, because this is a project that we're running with the Umsobo Youth Fund, to the then Umsobo Youth Fund, to able to as a part of the National Youth Service Program. Currently we have 55 of those that are in the learnership, and when they complete their training, they will be appointed as APOs and they will add the numbers. And there's a table there that was really showing the numbers per province. You can see in KZN they have 41 plus, they are also using 27 social workers as additional in terms of servicing certain courts. We have 4476. I think there's a discrepancy, there's 484. My apologies for that. Let's go to the next slide. In terms of secure care facilities, to date we've got 33 fully functioning residential care facilities accommodating children awaiting trial, and we have 6 newly built that are not yet functional, but the buildings are completed, which will provide us with an additional 320 capacity, because each one, there are 60 bed capacity. And we are planning other 18 within the MTF, which will also provide additional capacity of 1080. The total capacity within the MTF, it will be 3,808. I think what we need to note, Honorable Chair, is that we have developed also norms and standards for these facilities to standardize services and the blueprint for secure care. In terms of reception, assessment, and referral centers, these are centers that we use to do assessment for our children immediately when they are arrested and referred to us by police. It should be noted that we only assess when kids are referred to us. If we don't know of any child arrested, there's no way we can assess that child. So it's important that we work with police so that they immediately, when they arrest the child within that 24 hours, they should notify our probation officers to be able to assess that child within 48 hours. But if we're not informed, there's no way we cannot assess that child. Currently, we have 53 centers, and most of these centers are located in district courts and also in police stations and also in our offices. We also participate in the 2 one-stop child justice centers that the Justice Department spoke about, the Nairina one and the Mangaung, where we also have staff full-time sitting in that one-stop child justice center. This is the list of secure care facilities and the bed space capacity in detail. You can see there in Mpumalanga, they only have one facility. It's one province that is receiving our priority in terms. We are aware they are planning 2 more, but we're saying building a structure can take more than 2 years or so. Can they explore within the existing places of safety to have wings in other districts where they can accommodate children? Because the JCPS cluster, their departments are complaining even the distance traveling. If a child is arrested in Komazi, traveling to Henrina is really too far, and even bringing the child every 14 days to appear in court is really a challenging exercise. So it's one province that we have prioritized for this MTF. Next slide. Next slide, please. In turn, the Act also requires us to, previous slide, to develop a diversion accreditation framework, which is supposed to be tabled by the 31st. It's a month before the commencement of the Act, which means it's the 31st of March 2010. What we can report today is that we received an amount of 1.5 million from the Department of Justice during the adjustment, which was around September, because we didn't have additional funds. I think when they presented, they indicated that for the past 2 years, we have been requesting additional funding from Treasury on the to resource ourselves in terms of implementing the Act, but we never received any additional allocation. But Justice at least felt it necessary that there's no way as social development you can be fully ready without any financial support. So though the amount came very late around September, but we tried to speed up and appoint a service provider to assist us in developing that framework. As we speak, we have a draft document that we have consulted, and also a hard copy of a prototype accreditation system that we're going to use, which will be part of the accreditation framework, national policy framework, which will be tabled in Parliament. I must say, looking at the progress to date, we won't meet as a department the deadline of 31 March. What we have done, we have requested the minister to request an extension with 3 months to be able to table the framework around June. That is the realistic time that will be complete with all the processes, because after tabling, there are certain time frames that we need to meet as a department. Advertising in a government gazette, making sure that accreditation takes place, registration, and all those things that need to be put in place. So we won't be ready by 31 March. The draft has been consulted with technical key stakeholders. We still need to consult the draft with the DG's cluster, JCPS cluster departments, and also the ministers as mentioned in the act before tabling in Parliament. What we have been advised also by the Department of Justice, because we have been liaising with them, looking at the progress that we have made so far, that in terms of implementing the act, the transitional arrangements in Section 98 will apply in terms of providing diversion services moving forward. What we have also done in terms of diversion, we have developed minimum norms and standards for diversion, and those have been trained countrywide to both NGO sector that are providing services and also our officials that are providing the services, so that the compliance issue is monitored properly. We have also done an audit of all diversion programs in the country. We do have a list of those programs and where they are, so that we can identify gaps and fill in those gaps. So as we speak, we are ensuring that in each court, be it a periodical court or a district court, we have our own officials providing such services, because we didn't get additional funds for now to be able to fund NGOs to expand those services. But we are saying to this committee, we are not folding our arms. Even during the next MTF, we'll still submit a bid. Hopefully the issue of 2010 will be thing of the past, then they will consider our request, because for us, this is critical. If we don't expand those diversion programs, really, we won't be satisfied ourselves that we're really implementing the Act. Next slide. Also, the Act requires us to come up with a diversion register. With that one, we can safely say we have developed the register, and we have just put statistics there that to indicate that even if the Act is not in operation, we are currently providing diversion services. Those numbers are number of children that have accessed our diversion program. From April 2009 to January 2010, it's 18,495. In addition to that, we also have information management system within the department, which was funded through the Integrated Justice System. We call it Child and Youth Care Application, it's FICA, and also an Institution Administrative System. Basically, it's an electronic application that is used in residential care facilities, in our facilities, because as we're going to implement the Act, the court will need to know on a daily basis how many bed space available, so that they can be able to place children accordingly. I must say, Chair, at a given point, I understand the worry from staff that we don't have enough. The question is, how much is enough? Because as we speak, we're sitting with 600 beds approximately every month without use in our facilities. I think the challenge is the geographical location of our facilities, in such a, but it's not the question of being enough. That one I don't agree with. So it's the question of accessibility in terms of them driving to those areas to be able to place children. And sometimes the challenge is after assessment, our probation officers, they make recommendations to the court. They don't decide where the child should be placed. It's the court that finally decides. So whatever the probation officer does, it's just assessment, presenting the assessment, but maybe with the implementation of the Act and the preliminary inquiry, then jointly we'll be able to say where is the child suitable. Also in the terms of diversion, I want to also touch on the question that was asked by one honorable member to say, how do you know that this child is suitable for this type of a program? Basically, the assessment should tell you, because the assessment is detailed. It will tell you what is suitable, because it looks at the nature of offense of this child, the cognitive development of the child, the environment that the child is coming from, and other influencing characteristics that will advise, then the probation officer will make a recommendation in terms and attach the program to the prosecutor to say, this is the type of program that is meeting the requirements of the norms and standards that we think will benefit the child. In terms of training and capacity building, we have developed a probation practice guideline in partnership with other stakeholders. I think NPA alluded to that. We have been funded by UNICEF. We took an initiative of requesting additional funding from UNICEF since we didn't get any allocation the past 2 years. So it was developed and training was done because we wanted to have 75 or more master trainers trained. Because this probation practice guideline really, it talks about the roles and responsibilities of DSD, what the Act requires us to do, and what are the ABC things that our child and youth care workers will have to do, our APOs and our probation officers. And beyond that, we're also running a training. We have trained 180 probation practitioners in 9 provinces. We want to train, following from that master training, we want to train 180 probation practitioners, which we will start around March. But I must say, there was continuous training. I think it's in the next slide. Yes. There's also continuous training that we have done in the past 2 years to be able to make sure that probation officers are aware of what are they expected in terms of assessment, in terms of diversion norms and standards, and so on. And currently, we're specifically training them on the Child Justice Act itself, which we have started around beginning of Feb. It will end up now in February. As we speak, the training is taking place in Gauteng. Next slide.
5 minutes for Rana.
I'm almost done, Honorable Chair. This is my last slide, my last but one slide. We, as a DSD, we still need 484 probation officers, but this number includes supervisors and district coordinators because we have acknowledged that magistrates were also complaining about the poor quality of the report. Though we have, in the meantime, dealt with this in terms of training our probation officers, but we think if we don't strengthen the supervision capacity, that will never improve. It will be just a short term. So if we get additional amount, those are the things that we want to do. We want to appoint additional probation practice officers, which will include those and 772 APOs. I think I've mentioned bullet 2 that we have made requests without success. We're also mentioning that underutilization of our secure care. I think I've also mentioned that there's a complaint that there's not enough, but we think there's enough. Looking at the number of, maybe staff can tell us how many children are they arresting per month so that we can see whether there's no correlation and to indicate, because not all arrested children will have to go to secure care. We need to strengthen other programs that will really support our children. And the issue of accessibility has spoken to that. And we have a challenge of that. Most children are committing serious and violent crimes, and it's becoming a challenge for social development. Last slide. DSD will continue with the requesting of the bid. We will also market our facilities and improve on our programs. And we will also do proper consultation on the planned secure care to ensure that the location there is agreed upon within the cluster, because some of these facilities were built solely on the decision of social development in terms of where they should be located, and that creates a problem for the sector. And in terms of prevention, we have come up with a social crime prevention strategy to strengthen our prevention efforts, which we have finalized this year. Inko Munakin.
Inko Wakayan. Inko. Please.
Yeah, look, won't be in a particular order. But the presentation gives me one major concern about coordination.
Yes.
You want the police to tell you how many children you're arresting. Why don't you have that information from that already? I mean, you would be expecting that you would be working together. You would have those figures at your fingertips, because that's the number of children in trouble with the law that start entering your system. So can you please give us a context of why you need this information, why you need to come here and ask staff for it, why you can't get it. Then with your budget, you talked about submitting requests to Treasury through the cluster. We've been given a cluster budget bid
by DOJ, which they spoke about you here. You're not here in this document. They said you submitted... sorry? You're not in this document. They said you submitted specifically in their presentation that you and Correctional Services submitted your own. Okay, what does that say for coordination? Then the issue of the, what is it called, the diversion policy, and you only have, you had to produce this policy, and you are late because you had to get a consultant to do it. Now, you know, you've written to the minister to ask for an extension, but the act, the president signed it. Says that you have to submit it before the commencement of the act. So the minister can't give you an extension. And you know you were involved in the drafting of this act with us. So you know that. So I don't quite sort of understand what is going on there. So I think the presentation is quite disappointing. Then the other thing is on the probation officers. You've given us this chart on page, can't see the page, but anyway, there was a chart that was up there. How many, these are presumably, are these the posts that you've got, or are they the warm-blooded people that are in those posts? If it's the posts, how many vacancies have you got? Because my understanding is you've got quite a few vacancies. Then you say, no, by the end of the medium-term expenditure framework, you actually want another 484 probation officers. You've got 476 at the moment. You want to double it in 3 years. I just find that quite surprising. So, I mean, the 476 that you have, at least in theory, you know, that's actually, are you saying that's only half the number you're meant to have? And, I think
that's
enough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a few questions. You deal with the issue of probation officers, but there's no mention anywhere of social workers. Now, my understanding is that in many of these secure care facilities, your ratio of social workers to children is hopelessly inadequate and doesn't comply with the law. How many do you have? Have you done an assessment? And what are the ratios, generally speaking? Secondly, are some secure care facilities actually under the Department of Education? Because there is one here that I know of that you haven't mentioned in your presentation, which is the JG Serpentine in Eastern Cape, in Queenstown. Now, I also understand that you're wanting to close that down, or the other department is wanting to close that down, which is quite ironic given that you seemingly don't have enough facilities. And that all the children there, even those who have not been convicted, are in fact going to be sent to a prison, effectively, in Mthatha. I also just want to know what arrangements are there in place for schooling of children, because whether they should be given quick justice or not, as they should, we all know that doesn't happen, and many children are there for a long time. What is being done to make sure that they are getting educated in the meantime? And then you say there's 600 beds free, but then you're saying you want to build so many more facilities. I mean, are those facilities being put in the places where they are supposed to actually be, where they are most needed, and has a proper assessment been done as to why? I mean, I think it would be quite useful for us, in fact, to have a report on which facilities are at what capacity level, so we can see where the need is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Earlier on, we asked me who I am. I will definitely tell you. My name is Lekgetho.
Yeah.
I'm a member of the Police Committee, serving the ANC. Further than that, I come from Mafeking. Thank you very much.
Now I know you very well, Honorable
Lakhato. Thank you very much. Let's
protest.
Yeah. Think the Honorable Member from.
No.
We know which group he belongs to.
We know the one he supports.
No, there's five in court. Owen Cope, sorry, I forgot that.
I'm calling the meeting to order.
Thank you, sir.
Honorable.
You are complaining about the underutilization of your secure care facilities. I'm saying it's because you do not disclose their location. You are not accessible. You better start here to tell us where these 600 beds are located, so that our people in Nelspruit, Mayflower, they don't have place to go because they don't know about you. And you are saying again that more children are committing serious violent acts. Definitely it would serve the purpose that you tell us where these beds are. Thanks, sir.
Well, it's a small question. You talk about 600 beds, but this is a question most of my colleagues have also asked. Where are these 600 beds located? Because making an example of Mpumalanga again, if you say now you've got 600, assuming you've got 300 of those beds in Eastern Cape, there is a problem in Nelspruit. Are you expecting children from Nelspruit to be driven down to East London or to Amthatha? I mean, you see, and then you say now you seem to pass the buck to the police. The police, it cannot be the responsibility of the police. You must provide the facilities. And I believe that probably your report, it's so vague, it does not help us to understand that. That's the problem with your report. The one previous speaker said the same thing. Your report, it's more like somebody addressing a rally and making all vague promises which... after the rally, you didn't understand me. You have misunderstood me and all that. Because it is when you have made a very... I'm just saying, can you explain to us where is the problem, where is the location of the 600? How do you think, for instance, the problem in which you are sitting now, which was mentioned by the chairperson of the portfolio committee, in Nelspruit, there were 25 children in the police cell, and they've been there for more than a week. And we asked why. They said Henvina is full. We don't know where to send them. And you got 600 beds, probably 300 in Eastern Cape, probably 200 somewhere in KwaZulu-Natal.
For your comfort, presenter, Honorable Ngunguvel has got a different view about the quality of your report, for your comfort. Let's go on, Honorable Fred.
I was hoping you wouldn't say something like that, because I happen to agree with... I do think that the issue is less where these 600 beds are, as opposed to what are the problems regarding their underutilization. You go to any magistrate's court and you speak to any magistrate, and they'll say to you, we don't know what to sentence these kids to, because we don't know what is available. So there's your number one problem. Your second problem, of course, is who's going to be the taxi service. And I think this has been a problem from day one with this bill. Both the police, as well as social development, as well as correctional services, saying that's not our primary task. We don't transport. And I think there is going to be a key problem, regardless of where you build these facilities, whether it's 10 kilometers or 20 kilometers or whatever it is. I think there somebody has to address these protocols. And I suggest, Chair, that this committee requests an intersectoral attendance to this difficult issue. I mean, it sounds like a very easy problem, but in practice it creates huge difficulties. I really don't know, whether there has been in the plan, and what worries me more is, as much as you're saying that there are plans for probation officers in the medium-term expenditure framework, you'll be looking at building more secure care facilities and so on, or more beds. I'm not sure how that works. But for me, if you do not get the stats relating to how many kids are serving sentences in our prisons,
to determine how many bed spaces you're going to need. It's just, it's pie in the sky. It's planning without any informed basis. Likewise with the probation officers. I don't know if I can sit here with any degree of comfort to say the probation officers are available in all areas where they need it. Clearly from what the police are saying, that's not the case. So we need some kind of sense that social development, because social development is really the cog that holds this entire process together.
Yes.
Police can go ahead and try, you know, they're the first port of call, justice is your second port, that's fine, but at every level, social development has a role to play. And without social development giving us a sense of comfort that you know what the state of play is at the level of the police station, at the level of the courts, at the level of correctional services when you plan, I'm afraid I can't sit here and say that this is a report that has been well considered. As much as there seems to be some degree of delivery, I'm not sure if those secure care facilities are in the right place. The second issue that I want to raise, Chair, and maybe this is something that is extraordinary, but it seems to me if we're dedicating probation officers and social workers to monitor these kids while they are in diversion or whatever phase they're in, that it is incumbent on social welfare to start a process where you keep a recidivist register. So that at some point, as policymakers, we can sit back and say, is this working? This law that we've spent so much in terms of implementation, what we hear on the ground is that crimes are becoming more serious and younger people are perpetrating these crimes. Now, it's partly an education issue, it's partly a social work, but ultimately somebody has got to keep a record as to whether children who have been diverted, whether that happens only once, whether it has happened six times before they reach the age of 16, whether it happens, you know, 20 times. So that we have a good sense as policymakers as to where the law needs to be changed and amended in the future, because this is an entirely new dispensation for us. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of things are worrying me in this report, all under their obligations. The thing that worries me probably the most is on page 9, Section B, where you say, where there is an error in placing the child in correctional centre, the child must be referred back to court during the next court appearance to correct it. Now, these courts, it could take 14 days for this to go back to court. So for 14 days, the child is going to be in the incorrect correctional centre. And that really worries me, and I think that we're going to have to come up with something a bit better than that to find out if there's been an error. Sorry,
Are you done?
No, I'm not done. Okay. I think Mr. Landers is getting
agitated.
Not letting me finish. So what I'm saying is there has to be something from social services where children can be referred to when these errors occur, because we're already hearing there's 600 beds available, there's no beds available, and where do we put these children? Now, there are going to be many, many cases where there are errors that occur, especially in the direct, you know, when we start implementing this act. And when something like that happens, it's social development that's going to have to come in and literally save these kids before it gets any worse. And I just want to know if any plans are in place for this kind of thing. You know, when errors occur, will social services step in and you know, sort of take these kids away ASAP? Mm-hmm. Are there going to be social workers who are trained to do this?
Do you want to begin responding, department, please? Thank you. Honorable Ngubele decided to take a retreat, strategic retreat.
My evaluation skills. My evaluation skills.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There's a whole list, long list. I'll try. If I leave something, my colleagues will also remind me and assist me. The first one on the issues of coordination. The reason why I talked about numbers it's because of the issue of police saying the secure care facilities are not enough, because we need to link with the number of children that are being arrested, bearing in mind that not all children arrested will have to go to secure care. Usually in secure care, we put those children that are really a high risk. Otherwise, we need to opt for placing the children with their parents, diverting children, and other alternative placements. So for us as social development, though we are planning more, but the question of them being not enough, I think we acknowledge the problem of geographical location. That is hindering accessibility and driving distances by the police. In terms of cluster bid, we were supposed to be in that bid. We know we have submitted a cluster bid, and beyond the cluster bid, we also submitted a departmental request. So we're also submitting twice at the same time. For the past 2 years, we have never received anything. We have documentation to that regard. We can indicate. So maybe the document is on the page 11. There's DSD there in terms of the amount of money that we have requested along the cluster bid. And then in terms of the diversion framework, I've said we have requested the minister for extension. It's not the minister who needs to provide for an extension. The minister must approve that letter to go to the Minister of Justice, who must then request the Speaker of Parliament for an extension. So we know the processes, but it's just that now we're saying the request for extension is being attended to. In terms of probation officers, yes, those are warm bodies that are currently in the staff establishment. Unfortunately, I don't have figures in terms of the vacancies, which we can provide within this week if the committee needs, in terms of vacancies per province. And then the request that we need, I said for 84, but it should be noted that I've included there supervisors, and the ratio that we are working on is 1:6, one supervisor to 6 probation officers to be able to supervise, and also the district coordinators. And remember, each province has got number of districts. We need a coordinator for probation practice in each district so that they can act as a liaison for that district in terms of all police stations and courts. In terms of social workers in our secure camp, the current approved ratio is 1:30. So one social worker is to 30 children. So we are, as I've indicated, we've developed norms and standards, which is now going to compel all provinces to make sure that they meet the norm. If you have built a 60 capacity bed, it means you need 2 social workers in your facility that will be working in that facility, and that is being attended to. JJ Stuckfontein, it is a school of industry, it's not a secure care, so it's under education. All the reform schools and school of industries are managed by the Department of Education. And then the schooling of children. In some facilities, yes, there is schooling, but in some there's no formal schooling. But what we have requested now through the ICCJ is for Department of Education to take over the responsibility of schooling in all our facilities, because most will acknowledge that some children are arrested while they are in grade 10 or grade 12, so that they can be assisted, even if there's no formal schooling program in that facility, so that they can be assisted to be able to write exams or to even catch up when they go back to school in when they are acquitted from the alleged offenses. Additional facilities. We have a list. We will circulate the list. It's on the other side. Even before we leave, we'll circulate the list in terms of the allocation per municipality and per area so that members can see where they are and also where the gaps are. Underutilization of secure care. It's true, we acknowledge the challenge of Hendrina. That is why when I was presenting, I started with it to say Hendrina, Mpumalanga, is having a crisis in terms of making sure that they accommodate all children. But in terms of the statistics that we get, Hendrina is never 60% full capacity. So maybe when the members visited the province, that time they were lucky to be fooled. But honestly speaking, in terms of the statistic we collect every month, Hendrina never accommodated 60 children at a given time. But we'll make a follow-up on that and make sure that the province makes sure that they look for alternatives. We made suggestion to them to say, can they look at the existing places of safety? Because this is what other provinces has also done, to look at existing places of safety and make sure that they designate a wing where they can accommodate children while they are planning to build, because they are planning to build the two facilities in the other two, in Kazeni and the other district. The issue of taxi services, it is a critical issue. We under the impression that FAPS will transport the children, and it needs to be sorted out at a cluster level in terms of who is supposed to transport children from the court to the facilities. That needs to be really sorted out, because we were under the impression, and it was done like that, the police were transporting children as we speak to our facilities. Statistics, yes, to assist planning in terms of personnel. I think the bids that we have put the past 2 years, we worked on statistics looking at our hotspot area and the number of children arrested or being assessed in a particular area. That's how we identify the additional numbers in terms of needs per province and per district. We acknowledge we will explore and keep the recidivism register. I think it will assist us. Though in terms of the policy framework, the quality assurance will also be part of that, because we'll need to keep a database of all children who are accessing diversion and all those who are coming back to the system and reoffending. It will be part of our database. Errors occurring needs to be dealt with by in terms of placement. I need to mention, Honorable Chair, that we're working with DCS even currently. We have a task team called MATD, Management of Awaiting Child Detainees. So on monthly basis, they give us statistics in terms of children who are awaiting trial in their facilities. And I think we need to note that social development does not decide where the child should await trial. Ironically, those child that are in DCS facilities were committed by magistrates. So, but what we do, even after the probation officer has recommended otherwise, we sit with DCS, we do reassessment, we take these cases back to court again to say to magistrate, we are aware you have recommended or you have issued an order that this child must await there, but we are recommending an alternative placement again for this child. And in most cases, the magistrates do consider the reassessment reports, and as a result, the numbers DCS will indicate they've decreased quite a great deal in terms of the numbers of children that are waiting in DCS facilities. So even if there's an error, we will pick up during that task team meeting on a monthly basis to say how many children are there. Then we reassess, and then they go back to court. I'm not sure if
Ntate Ngungube,
no, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I know this is not a meeting where you have to debate what is a bad or good report. Otherwise, you need coffee to actually discuss that. You see, what I wanted to say, Honorable Chair, is that what I find assisting in this report is that it gives a framework that should be followed by all of us in terms of having a single report that can be analyzed on the state of readiness. Because it's got three important things. Each role player has got an action step it's supposed to do. There's a due date it's supposed to be there, and there's a progress report corner. What it means is that if you were to get a similar structure from all, what you call, from all role players, you begin to look at the bigger picture and say, role player so-and-so are supposed to carry this task, it's supposed to have been finished by this date, and this is the progress. If you got a report like that, it becomes a very, very useful or to cause report. I accept that what was being punched with substance and other things that we were supposed to be in that fashion, I don't want to debate that. But in terms of the structure, I stand by my
Thank you,
thank
sir.
You,
sir.
Thank you, Chair. My question was not responded to. I am saying we're in Mpumalanga and we found many children congested in cells. So my question is very simple. Where are these 600 beds located? You keep on talking about them, but you forget to tell us where they are located. Thanks.
Department, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think we really need to investigate the Mpumalanga case, because in fact the children were not supposed to be packed and not being assessed, because I'm assuming the police, after arrest, they should have informed the probation officers. Maybe they should have told the committee to say, we have informed probation officers, they have not come to assess. Then we investigate, because otherwise they need alternative placement. So in terms of beds, the 600 beds are not in one province. They are scattered, because as I said, they are not fully utilized in one facility. There are those that are fully utilized and those that are... Honorable Member, I cannot give you the list now unless if I open the other presentation that I got beside this one. Then I'll be able to show you, because I've got a list of all the secure care facilities and where they are located.
Okay. Yeah, we shall open the list, not in this session.
Can be
tea time sometimes. You'll open the list and show it. Because we need to take the next presentation. Any other questions, colleagues? Thank you very much. Then let's move to the next one. I'm going back to correctional services. Who are next? Follow. Correctional services, please.
There's no lunch.
I in the parliament sometimes work without lunch.
No, not me.
But there is food, yeah. You can pick up his lunch.
Okay.
What is food?
Go and get some more.
Have some more food.
Courage. Let's do the job, guys. Because we are left with just two departments. We can finish. It's doable. This assignment can be done. It's brave, we survive. Let's go on. Thank you. That is correctional services. Are we ready? Please, fire.
Put on the mic.
Your mic should be on, we can hear you.
Jefferson, yes, we will talk to the overview of children in DCS facilities, the obligation on the side of DCS programs, the current developments, challenges and recommendations. I think it's important for the honorable members to know that end of 2007 and 2008, in DCS facilities less than 18 years, we had 1,163 children. We have monitored that and worked with the cluster that was mentioned. End of 2008-09, we ended with 8-1 children, and we have monitored since last year, 1st of April, the different quarters, three quarters over that period. We ended in December with 564 children in facilities. We'd also like to present to the committee that the 14 to 16 years specifically was also monitored. Since last year, we are giving the minister every second week a report on this group of children. And we have started 15 November with 200 children nationally and distributed now over across all the regions. 15 December, we had 215 children. End of December, 195. So there's quite a lot of fluctuations. And 8th of February this year, we ended with 143 children in our facilities, in that age group of 14 to 16 years. end of December, the distribution of the different children in the different regions. We can see in Eastern Cape, end of December, we had 169 children. KZN 190, Free State, Northern Cape 72, and most possibly those are the areas where secure care facilities have not been established as much as in the other regions, because when you look at Gauteng, there's only 67 children in Western Cape, 51. ITG children in terms of crime categories, I would like to refer to the aggressive crime categories, 275, sexual 97, economic 162, and narcotics 10. Other crimes that we are not monitored specifically as 20. So end of December, there's the different crime categories for the 560 plus children. ATDs with bail, average active ATD children with and without bail. No bail cases out of the 560 plus is 527, and bail cases only 37. Now, on the side of DCS, in terms of the Act, only in exceptional cases, children have to be referred to correctional facilities. I think that is what the Act would want to ensure. And these are some of the areas that the Act is referring to. The assessment needs to be done. Now, I think in terms of the probation officer assessment report, there is a probation officer at DCS facilities in the country who is doing this assessment with the assistance of DCS officials. So every second week we have to go back to court if there is no decision, final decision. So the probation officer is sitting at DCS facilities. And the no law or sentence of imprisonment imposed on a child, including a sentence of life imprisonment, may directly or indirectly deny, restrict, or limit the possibility of early release of a child sentenced to any term of imprisonment. Other obligations on the side of the department is we work very closely with the other departments in terms of their development of guidelines, regulations, all those different requirements of the Act. And what we have also done, the training manual that Justice has provided to us, we have made that available to all the regions, and a copy of the Act so that officials are quite aware of the requirements of the Act. Programs, the Department of Social Development has taken the responsibility to provide programs for children, and on DCS side we provide for health care services and crisis intervention by psychologists and social workers within the department. So all officials, as I said, have been made aware of the new Act, and copies of this have been made available to supervisors wherever we have the children in these facilities. We are monitoring children under correctional supervision so that we know who's moving out into the system for monitoring purposes. We monitor the referral of children to secure care facilities as statistics are provided, and we also provide that to social development, and we also play a role then if there's bail cases to see to it that children are not entering our correctional facilities unnecessarily. The challenge for the department, I think, is a collective responsibility. DCS maintains that the correctional centre are not ideally suited for the rehabilitation of children, but those who are being sent to us, we are taking care of them in the facilities. And we are well cognizant of the fact that a child below the age of 14 are in a crucial stage with regard to his personal development. And we would like to recommend that DSD Social Development, they kept on providing programs to these children and services, and that it continue to render these services to children, and that facilities be established to accommodate risk posed by all categories of children. Because currently it's the case when there is an aggressive child that the staff at secure care facilities can't manage or handle, then those children are being sent to these care facilities. And then that funding for facilities be ring-fenced, especially for refurbishment, upgrading, and the establishment of new facilities. Chair, that's in brief the report on our side. And because of the space that we have available in our facilities in terms of the reduction, we would like to see a situation that we divert children away from coaxial facilities.
Thank you very much. Honorable Lennon.
Chair, we take note of the report, but we would like to see added to this report a statistics that shows us how many children are in prison having been convicted of criminal offences. Presently, the report only shows us how many are awaiting trial, which will give us a clearer picture of the entire situation. So it's a little one-sided and lacking in that regard. Because then, Chairperson, you'll be able to then challenge correctional services, social welfare, and the other role players as to their role in the whole thing.
Now, look, I don't think there's much in the actual make life easier for correctional services, because it should result in fewer children held in custody awaiting trial and fewer children sentenced to terms of imprisonment. So it's going to probably be less work for correctional services, not more work. And the presentation, I mean, maybe you weren't sure what to say, but you've sort of given us the same figures in different forms, and some of the more useful figures are not there. I agree with it would be useful to get that breakdown of sentenced prisoners, and then also the age group, because a 15-year-old is quite different from a 17-year-old, and then also the categories of crime. And then even with the awaiting trial prisoners, I mean, the things here I don't understand with the statistics. I mean, I don't know the relative sizes of the children arrested. But, you know, if you just look at the general population, I mean, Kaoping is one of the most populous provinces. But yet in terms of the numbers of children awaiting trial in custody, Kaoping has very few. Eastern Cape has a high number, the population is smaller, and you wonder why is that? Is it a problem of magistrates refusing bail, granting bail too high, those kinds of things. So I think the figures of the awaiting trials are interesting. I'm not sure, particularly with the younger ones and the non-violent offences, why they're in prison. And why the bail breakdown is interesting. You know, why children who have bail of under R1,000 are still in prison. I don't know what correctional service is doing about that, but I think it's not so much the implementation of the act. It's stuff that's already there and should be easy to sort out. And I don't know why it's not being sorted out. And then, you know, we usually do a visit as a sort of cluster to Polesmore, and then it usually results in unhappiness that the waiting trial children particularly are not being looked after.
That they're there
and not being looked after, and then it becomes a bit of passing the buck around who's responsible for these kids. I know, notice you're quite adamant it's social development. But maybe that's something to come to later. But maybe one other question. You give us statistics from 14 to 18. Can we then assume that there are no children, at least from the date that you give it here, 8th of February, no under 14s in the waiting trial?
Confirmed.
Okay. And there have not been any since 15th of November. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any further questions, comments on the... Rad, do you want to respond to, if there is something you feel like responding to, the department?
Chairperson, yes, the statistics are available, center cellar, that can be also made available to the committee. So we would like to be given that opportunity to do that. Yeah, so we will include that and resubmit to the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. You are free from your board chair. Legal Aid South Africa?
No, please. I'm still ready.
Let's get your mic on first.
Thank you, Che. Introduce myself. I'm Patrick Hundermark, Legal Development Executive at Legal Aid South Africa. I suppose we're last in the feeding chain, I suppose, in terms of resourcing as well, so I come alone.
You couldn't afford tickets for two. That's all right.
Thank you, Che. I'm just trying to get the... you show it. Richie, the initial two slides just deal with legal representation in terms of the Child Justice Act, because obviously those responsibilities fall to Legal Aid South Africa. Obviously Section 82 and 83 are the main ones. Specifically, where a child is not legally represented, we must then evaluate and decide whether to provide legal representation. And no plea may be taken until a child has been afforded the chance to obtain legal representation. And of course, a new provision that's come in, that no child may waive his or her right to legal representation. Obviously, at this stage, we don't know what the impact of that section is going to be on in terms of the demand for our legal services. We know what our current demand is, but to go and predict it becomes a little bit difficult. Also, where a child declines to appoint or give instructions, Legal Aid South Africa must appoint a legal representative to assist the court. And that's also dealt with in the regulations as to how do you assist a child in court that's not prepared to give you instructions. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it becomes very similar to a where you're representing a Section 205 witness, where you've got to address the court on whether the person should get that indemnity or not, and I suppose a similar approach would have to be taken in regard to a child. So those are new provisions that would have to be tested. Then also, what was not originally envisaged is the legal representation of preliminary inquiry. It is not excluded. So at this stage, this will also be a new demand on our services in terms of the preliminary inquiry. Obviously, there would be an impact as to whether that reduces the number of trials that our practitioners would have to be involved in. So we'll have to have a look and assess the impact of that going forward. Also, then Section 48, in terms of the postponement of preliminary inquiry, says where it is postponed to note a confession, admission, or hold an identity parade or pointing out parade, the magistrate must inform the child to have an adult or a guardian or a legal representative during those proceedings. So once again, these during those preliminary inquiries would require the attention of our practitioners. That really just deals with the obligations in terms of the Act. Then really comes to, I deal with the provision of legal aid services really under three main headings. And I think what we've got to understand is all courts are designated as child justice courts. So it doesn't matter, district court, wherever it may be, a regional court, wherever it may be, and a high court, wherever it may be, can be a child justice court. So for us, and I think we've got to go and have a look, the protocol, as we've mentioned previously and previous presenters have mentioned, has been in place since 2001-2002 in regard to children and the diversion of children. And during that time frame, in terms of our 2008-2009 financial year, and these statistics appear in that annual report, we represented about 43,000 children, of which about 5,500 were children in civil matters, and about the other 37,500 were children in conflict with the law. So really what we're saying is we currently service these number of children in terms of our current systems by means of our salaried legal practitioners, all of our private practitioners briefed and adjudicated depending. So we cover each court in South Africa, either by our own practitioners or by then adjudicated practitioner, and that we would continue to do so without additional resources. So the current model in terms of that coverage would have to continue.
there will be no additional resources made available to cover these child justice courts in terms of those definitions, because we haven't been given it. I think the question came earlier in terms of the request for additional budget, and I think my original presentations when the bill on child justice was being considered was you looking at approaches in terms of these courts. Most of the child justice courts and children are going to pass through our district courts, which is then where we have candidate attorneys. We said at that presentation the ideal situation would be that you need to then have admitted legal practitioners and not candidate attorneys dealing with children, and specifically trained to be able to deal with children, so that they have able to apply and assist children more effectively, and that children in themselves need a different approach, and you need someone that has that understanding and has had that necessary training. So from that perspective, the question of budget is how do you approach the implementation of this act. And we said ideally you should have courts that are then dedicated to children, so that you can put dedicated resources there, and specifically for us, that would then be admitted legal practitioners. So that's where the issue of budget comes. So now without that budget, and without looking at how you limit the numbers of courts in the country that are child justice courts, our approach would have to be the general approach, as I've set out here, that our normal coverage system would apply to children. I think that's the understanding the committee needs to have in terms of budget. The further issue that impacts on budget is the question of, are other role players going to get additional resources? I suppose we're in a fortunate position, if we can say that, that none of the other role players within the criminal justice system, and specifically the prosecution and or the magistracy or DOJ, are going to be getting additional resources at this stage. So we are able to then continue with the delivery of our services in terms of our normal court coverage plan. So that's the first thing. I think also, though, what you've got to understand is rural areas are going to have challenges, and more from the magistracy perspective. If you understand that a magistrate that sits at a preliminary inquiry in Pofada, and if ultimately that matter goes to trial because there is no decision on a diversion, that magistrate will not be able to sit. So the magistrate in Pofada is going to have to swap with the magistrate in Springbok, so that the one can come run the trial and the other one can go run the other magistrate's trial in that area. So we must understand there are going to be practical challenges in terms of the implementation, specifically in rural areas, in terms of preliminary inquiries where those matters ultimately go to trial. And we've got to understand those as issues coming forward. And I think also in terms of the Act, the question arises, well, what about the rights of children? I think the Act is critical in that it brings consistency, and there's legislative consistency in terms of how do we approach children, in terms of diversion, what is required, who can get diversion. For example, we've just had a matter on appeal relating to a girl who was 16 years of age in Koffiefontein, stole chocolates, 29 rand. Our practitioner wasn't covering the court on the day. Prosecution didn't consider it a diversion. Magistrate didn't consider it a diversion. The parent was there. She pleaded guilty, sentenced to 150 rand fine. 30 days later, couldn't pay the fine, brought back to court, immediately sent to prison. In the police cells, she alleges she was raped. Policeman has been found not guilty at a disciplinary inquiry, saying it wasn't rape. So working for the police seems to be, must have done it in his lunchtime, and therefore there was no disciplinary offence.
Yeah.
On appeal, we've been successful, not again setting aside the conviction, but on setting aside the sentence, and the sentence has been postponed. That's the challenge to children in rural areas. And that's the critical element that this Act is intended to address, is those inconsistencies and the lack of application of the rights of children, specifically in rural areas. And that's what we've got to guard against. I think the rural areas is our challenge. Where you've got urban centres, it's much easier. That's the first issue. Then I would move on to my second slide, which deals with one-stop child justice centres. When we initially started this process, 13 one-stop child justice centres were initially planned or envisaged. Currently, we have no clarity on the number of these one-stop child justice centres that are going to be rolled out, their location, or their jurisdiction. So, in terms of that, there's currently only two that are operational, that's in Port Elizabeth and in Bloemfontein. Now, we as Legal Aid South Africa deploy dedicated resources to those one-stop child justice centres. So once again, depending what happens, whether we're going to have that dedicated capacity, whether it's going to be at secure care facilities or wherever it may be, we are going to need specific additional funding to be able to provide those dedicated resources to any of those additional one-stop child justice centres. And so once again, that's the issue in terms of the budget proposal. We based it on 13. Now we've got two, and we don't know how many more we're going to have. So that's once again the influence in terms of budget and the budgeting process for the implementation of the Act. once again also then capacity in terms of the jurisdiction of the area of coverage of those one-stop child justice centres will also determine demand. The greater the caseload, the more practitioners we're going to have there in terms of being able to assist children and to service children. So I think that just deals with one-stop child justice centres. Then I move on to my next slide, which really comes on an aspect that there are currently dedicated child justice courts implemented by chief magistrates. So in Pretoria, you've got two courts that are dedicated only to deal with children's matters. In Johannesburg, you have one. I'm sure we have more around the country. But what that then means is you are able to locate dedicated resources, as I mentioned, in terms of admitted legal practitioners at those courts. But once again, if there are more chief magistrates and or regional court presidents, I assume would be able to designate, so you're going to have more of those courts, and you're going to have to look at how you resource those and in terms of what capacity you put into place. So it's envisaged that where we have district courts that then become dedicated, that our candidate attorney posts at those courts be converted into admitted practitioner posts. And once again, that has then the implications in terms of budget. But at this moment in time, as my first slide indicates, we will cover it in terms of our general coverage plan of the courts as we have been doing in the past. That deals with the provision of legal services. Then I can move on, really, obviously, budget for implementation. And I think I've really dealt with it in my previous presentation. It's a question of then approach in terms of the money that we requested, the monies that we haven't got. As such, we've not received an allocation in terms of our medium-term expenditure framework for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. The Department of Justice, as we heard earlier, has indicated that they have 30 million rand for the implementation of legislation, which they've then allocated to the Child Justice Act for the 2010-2011 financial year. It's only for that financial year. So once again, and they've recommended that we get 10 million of that 30 million, but one, we've had no official confirmation that it is as that allocation, nor has a transfer been effected for that. So effectively, you can't utilize and implement anything using those funds. And anything that you implement has to be on a short-term basis because it's not added to our baseline, so therefore it's not recurring funding, and therefore you can't then go and put in permanent resources to deal with the issues. It only permits then a limited and unsustainable response to the implementation of the Child Justice Act from our perspective, and that issue would have to then be clarified for us in terms of that resourcing linked to whatever the approach is going to be ultimately on the ground. What do we implement on the ground? And that becomes critical. Then I can move to the last aspect, linking to the training of our practitioners. It's correct, this training material that has been developed in terms of in conjunction with the ISCCJ, we have been part of that working group on the development of the training materials. But let's say that training material, the training that has taken place, has been to look at and test the manual and improve the manual, and that's the training that's happened. What you don't have, though, in the manual is the gazetted regulations, which haven't been finalized. You don't have the NDPP directives, and you don't have the SAPS national instructions. For me, as the head of training from a Legal Aid South Africa perspective, can't do training just on the Act itself, and that would have happened over a period of time. You need all those directives and the regulations to train your practitioners properly in terms of what are the rights of the children, how should it be implemented, what do the directives say, what do the instructions say, so that your practitioners have then a broad understanding of the overall picture in terms of child justice, not just limited purely to the Act. We obviously have ongoing training in terms of the current situation in terms of children, dealing with children in conflict with the law, in terms of generic skills. We also have in an agreement with the Centre for Child Law, Dr. Anne Skelton, over the last 3 years in terms of support. The support consisted of obviously training on these issues, also then the new Children's Act. But also specifically then looking at the impact of the Child Justice Act on our approach and training our practitioners on that. But you'll have to go further and you'll have to have more detailed training in terms of these notes that have been finalised, but incorporating them, as I mentioned, the regulations and the directives and the instructions. Otherwise, it's going to serve no purpose to run our training until those are settled and finalised. The other issue and challenge for us is the training is going to have to happen in phases. We are training our practitioners that are currently in the courts that have to cover the courts. And so you can't go and disrupt the normal functioning of the courts to be able to effect this training. So you're going to have a phased approach where we would be looking at using internal trainers that have been trained as trainers, but utilizing this materials to be done. And so specifically from that perspective, That will have to be rolled out, and we can only roll it out once all these aspects have been attended to. And yes, we do require additional budget in terms of the training. We have 129 offices throughout the country, so you could have in each office someone training, but invariably we train in the regions, in each of the provinces, so that you have centralized training within the provinces, so that you have someone that has specialist knowledge in the topic doing the training, so that they can deal with the issues and impart essential skills to your practitioners. So that's really where that budget would come from. Then one further thing we're doing in terms of a support agreement with the Center for Child Law is we're having a colloquium looking at the development of child practice rules for legal practitioners. Develop for practitioners an understanding. How do you practice if you are a practitioner in terms of children? How to deal with children? So in March we've got this colloquium where we're looking at how do we develop and developing these practice rules for implementation in Legal Aid South Africa, specifically for our practitioners that will have to deal with children. And that's really, from our perspective, the issues and our preparedness in terms of the implementation of the Act. So we are currently rendering those services. We will continue to render those services, but only with the current available resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's in record time. Popa and Frimbok, what relationship do you have with that, sir? Popfather and Springbok. What relationship do you have with Popfather and Springbok?
They're just not distant rural areas. I have a great relationship to the Eastern Cape, but I didn't want to show my affinity there.
Did they?
Yeah, I mean, so the first question is going to be the regulations. How has Legal Aid South Africa made input into those regulations? Are you happy with the ones that were tabled? Then I think the main thing is the budgetary question. And how much is this really going to increase the workload on your lawyers? I think, don't you generally try and ensure that every child does have legal representation? So how many more is it going to be? You put in your presentation how many more lawyers are going to be needed. You put in your presentation, you make a thing of legal representation of preliminary inquiry. The Act does not preclude a child from being represented by a legal representative of preliminary inquiry. So that will increase your workload. But we don't actually want lawyers for preliminary inquiry. Okay? And we put that provision in. And if you look at the preliminary inquiry section, it doesn't mention lawyers. We put that in under legal representation in case a child wanted a lawyer there. But the whole thing is it's a non-adversarial inquiry, which would look more at diversion. And if it goes on to trial, that's where we want the lawyers. But you've made it as though that's going to increase it. I would have thought that for the moment, Legal Aid South Africa could say, we're not going to provide lawyers in preliminary inquiries. Those preliminary inquiries are anyway going to take place in the first appearance. In the first 48 hours, and if you've got to then wait for Legal Aid South Africa attorneys, it's going to cause further delays. If you put it into something you want more money for, you talk about a deferment for pointing out in the slide, where the preliminary inquiry is postponed to notice confession, admission, or hold an ID parade, the magistrate must inform the child to have, and then there's a typo, and adult legal guardian during the proceedings. That's not what the Act says. Okay, so you use this to say we need more lawyers with Legal Aid South Africa because this would happen. The Act says the magistrate must inform the child of the right. Okay. Whereas you say they have to have a lawyer, they in fact just have a right, and that's what they explain. So I'm a bit worried you've souped things up a bit. If you look at what you're asking for in terms of more money, you want 95, this coming financial year, you want 95 million for human resources. You want 27 million for infrastructure requirements. I'm not quite sure what those are. Because you're not, the one-stop centers, I think there's not going to be an expansion under the current, does the medium-term budget expenditure framework provide for any expansion of the one-stop? No, it doesn't. So for the next 3 years, under the current sort of economic climate, nothing there. So I'm not sure what your infrastructure requirements are. And then, the training, you want 500,000 for that. We've heard the police saying, look, they're going to do it in-house, so maybe they're a bigger organization. maybe they're a bigger organization than you are, but also your people are university graduates. They've got law degrees. And one of the things that you pick up with any form of university degree is how to read a book, how to read an act, how to read a textbook. You know, one would have thought that a good manual is sufficient. You know, I'm not sure why you want all this money for training. I would have thought, is that $500,000 related to production of manuals? Or why do you have to physically train these people? Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, no. On a light, which is not a light or not, I just want to say a little bit, I accept that the legal profession is continuously an evolving profession, and it will always. So I accept that there will always be need for training. There will never be any institution that will actually have a perfect preparation for that. That's why you have things like forensic psychology that are beginning to stress preparation of people who are going to be tried, whether it's civil or criminal. So I think we agree on that. The point I want to raise is that, this will be my last remark, Jefferson. This issue of legal representation and whether a child declines or not, I think it requires that there be discussions and a common understanding in the context of improving justice administration, in the context of extending the principle, the obligation of the state to protect the interests of what we call of the child. What I'm strongly stressing is that the legal aid should not sit back on this matter. Should proactively say, let's interact so that we have a common understanding about this matter. Because it seems to find way into that principle of the responsibility of the state to protect the interests of the child. Because if you know the underlying principles why the interest of the child will be protected, then you will understand the care, the need for making sure that there's a need to ensure legal support here, whether the child agrees or not. But there's a need to ensure that there's a proactive coordination to achieve that intended goal. The other issue is, again, improving the administrative justice in this in this arena that was spoken about. It applies to everybody, Shabazz, that the issue of coordination, I want to stress it like a scratched record, that I think our administration just has to improve. Actually, the reason for political leadership to have administration, I think the reason that we have that must be realized through the proper application of the administration for those set intentions. And the way we are working now, I think we should just eliminate this work to rule type of thing. The other issue that I think is critical, Shepherd, maybe as we move forward, that we should actually see this as a very, very critical issue. This one-stop thing, this one-stop... It is critical if we want to improve the administration of justice among kids. And I think we need to have a clear plan for improving that. Because if we don't have this one-stop thing for a long time, what it suggests, it creates conditions for children to be moved from one place to another, being dealt here 100 kilometers, 50 kilometers away, meeting this service that way and so on. It undermines the very purpose that led to the intervention through this act. And I think we need generally to focus on that and say, maybe in 15 or 10 years, where shall we be with regard to this? Because unless that thing is sorted out, most of the intended objectives of this act are not going to be what we call to be realized. Basically, those are the few issues I want to resolve.
Michael?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm going to disagree slightly with Honourable JJ, in that I think that there should be legal representation for a child at the preliminary inquiry. I think this is the time that the child is at the most, or his or her most vulnerable. In the Act, under Chapter 7, Preliminary Inquiries, point 3, subsection C, says a child's appearance at the preliminary inquiry is regarded as his or her first appearance before a lower court in terms of Section 50 of the Criminal Procedures Act. So that means the child is appearing in a court, be it a lower court, but the child is there. You can then go further on to Section 44.1 that says the following persons must, in addition to the inquiry magistrate and prosecutor, attend the preliminary inquiry. That means a prosecutor is attending the preliminary inquiry. And I think it is bizarre that the Act doesn't say that the child must have legal representation at this point. And I said this, you know, when we discussed this issue at an earlier point, is that it is possibly the most terrifying thing a child will ever go through to appear before a court. It's scary. It's scary for the child's parents, who I can almost guarantee you will not know much about the law. And they will need someone, hopefully from the legal aid board, or if they can't afford someone of their own, to explain to them what the proceedings are. And I think it is of the utmost importance that we ensure that these children are properly represented all throughout the process, from start to finish, because that is what is in the best interest of the child.
Can I just come in there? I mean, I suggest you read the Act. I mean, it may be regarded as the first appearance, but it is a non-adversarial inquiry to see what... No, can I finish, please? I'm on the floor. To see what happens as far as the placement of the child, whether they should be given diversion, that kind of thing. And even though you have your views, at the moment the Act does not provide for representation. And that is my point to Legal Aid South Africa. They're acting as though it does, where it doesn't. There's a provision that they may attend. And given that there's a shortage of resources, maybe that's the place that the could be cut. But what you're looking at is more of an amendment. But look at the overall context of that inquiry. But yes. I don't think a debate between us. The fact of the matter is, the Act does not require.
If I may just respond, I have the highest respect for Honourable JJ, but he mustn't assume that he's the only person in the room who's read the Act, because he will be highly, highly mistaken. The fact of the matter is we as a committee have to sit here and not just look at what's in the Act, we have to look at what is in the best interest of the child. And as Honourable JJ said, they may attend. So what I'm saying is, I think that they should attend. And as a member of this committee, I have every right to stand up for the millions of children whose voices I represent and say that I would like legal representation for every child that appears before a preliminary inquiry, because these children, they get lost in the system. Honourable Landers was telling me about a child who was lost in the system for 2 years before he was found. This is one case. These children, we are here to discuss what's in the best interest of the child.
Agreed. There's no quarrel on that one.
He agreed. He agreed. I now want to try and summarize what we need to do from here.
Are we getting a response from them?
Maybe a response from yourself.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I think Member Jeffries might have been out when I made my initial presentation, and I don't think my placing of these sections here wasn't intended to say that we needed. What I said in my presentation was, we don't know what impact this is going to have on our demand for services. And what I said, the way we render services now will continue as we have done in the past, because we rendered services to about 43,000 children. So we're able to do that without any additional budget, and we will continue to do so. About 37,500 of that were children in conflict with the law. We're not able to say at this stage what the increase in demand is going to be on the preliminary inquiry stage. We don't have additional resources, nor do magistrates have additional resources. So the reality is, our model of service deliveries, if we have a practitioner of that court, whether our salaried practitioner or duty care practitioner, they would then have to attend to that matter. So whether it was now doing the preliminary inquiry or not, that court wouldn't function, wouldn't work in otherwise for any other cases. So that's why we would be able to attend to that without necessarily the additional resources. But what that will do is, any other cases that would have been done in that court would stand still. So you've got to determine the impact, and we don't know that at this stage. So what I said also was, it's a question of approach. Our request for those additional funding for human resources was an issue of having dedicated courts where we would have admitted legal practitioners rendering those services, and that's the basis on which the budget was done. When we don't have that now, we continue with the service delivery model as we have it currently, and district courts are mostly serviced by candidate attorneys. So that delivery model will then continue, also then for children where they come in at a district court where we have a candidate attorney. So that funding model is dependent on what kind of approach do we take in approaching children. Preliminary inquiries, I think we might face a situation, magistrates are going to be reluctant to have a prosecutor there, a child there, no legal representative. The first review as to why you did not allow this child to have legal representation here at their first appearance is unconstitutional, and we go all the way to court. And so I see magistrates being very conservative in their approach. As of nature, they do their good, and that they're going to request our practitioners to actually to be present. So that's what I anticipate. But I can't tell you what the increase in demand for our services are going to be. Reality now is it will be the same magistrate and therefore our same practitioner. So at this stage, no impact, unless, of course, you do give additional magistrates. And depending specifically in rural areas, as I mentioned, the problem that we might face there with magistrates doing prelim inquiry but can't do the trial, and therefore you have to have magistrates travelling and exchanging their seats to be able to get the trials done. So I think that's in terms of budget and those issues, and I did say that at my initial presentation.
But Chair, my question was, how many children are you not covering at the moment?
It's difficult to say because to go Department of Justice statistics, we know the statistics we've got, and the statistics out of the annual reports, I haven't been able to determine that. So that's my difficulty to say to you, what's the difference between those that we are representing, the 37,500, and how many that are going through the court systems currently and looking at the diversions? I think the last DOJ annual report was about 48, 49, so it could be 12,500, but I'm not too sure how accurate that is.
Well, I want to ask, are you done?
Chair, no, I think I must respond on the regulations
okay.
issues. Yes, we have been requested for input. We have given input specifically on those issues where we do have concerns. I think the determination of the age of culpability and those issues and that determination and who should determine that and legal representation in that process also becomes critical. But overall, yes, we have been consulted on it and we have given input to them on the regulations. And our concerns.
Follow up on that. The tabled regulations, then, are you happy with them, or have you not seen them?
I must say, I haven't seen the new ones that have just come yesterday. I haven't had an opportunity to look at them.
No, the ones that were tabled, that was 2 weeks ago.
We had commented on those, the ones prior to those that were then tabled.
Okay, I think we are done, Marlon. We should just try and see what Ngungubelo thinks and what I think along with him, with that to reflect your views here in the form of
the way forward. Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think from the opening words we made, Honorable Member, that we had hoped last week, when we meet here today, we would be able to say, yes, we are ready. But the danger is that whatever decision we take now, either way, it's not based on any concrete information in front of us. That is where the danger is. Now, the point now is, I was proposing to you, Honourable Chairperson, that maybe we consider this the last step before the final position. That we ask our, whether it's MTA, they are all here now, that maybe again we patiently say, let's have another, what to call, meeting. Where in this instance, they will have met, no excuses of non-cooperation of anybody, they will present a single document that says, these were the objectives of getting ready. These were the objectives towards a process of ensuring that we are ready to implement by the 1st of April. This is the progress with regard to those objectives. and then we think the act can be implemented by the 1st of April, or we think it can't. And these are the reasons, and these are the proposals. And that is a short summary I wanted to propose to you, Chairperson, because under the circumstances, we are not extremely better than last week, but we are better. But this cannot be the final step before we make that pronouncement. That's my proposal. We need a concrete platform on the basis of which we say we are ready. Yes, we can move ahead. We are not ready. These are the alternative proposals. But all that must be based on an unshaky ground. Thank you.
Yeah, I think justice would lead that coordination in terms of get everybody together and then let's run with it quickly. We've got short time frames, it's a month, we need to come back. You will, in your meetings, also take into account the questions that have been posed here, the discussions that have gone around here, the debates and so on. Otherwise, I want to thank everybody for having come.
Cooperation.
And your cooperation has been extremely useful in so far as I'm concerned. And, you want to say the last word?
Just very, no, Chair, you can do that. But just very briefly, Chair, we did...
Well, that's normally reserved for me.
I quite agree with that. Chair, we did give a presentation, as you know, on the regulations last week, and there were a number of suggested amendments to those regulations. We have made the amendments. We in the process also of advising the Minister to withdraw the rules that have been tabled. But we, as I say, we have made the amendments to the regulations. We also incorporated some suggestions made by police. And we have made copies of that document available to the Secretariat. So whenever you are ready to take a further briefing, I know in the past what the committee did was to establish a subcommittee, and possibly this can be done again, I don't know, but we are ready now to brief you once again on the amended regulations to indicate to you what we have amended whenever you are ready to do so.
Thanks, Chairperson. The readiness of the regulation is a material element of readiness in general. Therefore, the point I'm trying to stress is that if that updated version is circulated, there has been a communication with the minister to withdraw. The next meeting, when we'll be finalizing all these other issues, that must also be ready to be interrogated and be finalized. That would be my proposal.
Yeah. Chair, just to follow up, I mean, while we've got the police, the NTA is still there, yeah. To please make sure that they get a copy of these regulations, they make input, and because this is an informal process, and then they can finalise if there's any further changes that are necessary, they can finalise, and the minister then introduces something that everybody is happy with.
Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Thank you.
I'm going to the next one. 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 I'm going to the next one.